welcome to another episode of the New 52 Review. This is episode 15, Red Lanterns, Volume 1, Blood and Rage. Both of those remind me of you, Eric. What do you think?
Blood and Rage. Is it because I don't like to get angry and I'm afraid of blood? Are these the correlations you're making?
Maybe it's because you're always afraid you'll get hepatitis and you're always raging out at that. Is that possible? But this is...
I don't know if I rage or I'm just fucking frightened out of my goddamn mind, you guys. Because I don't know what people do.
The thing is, this book has a couple lessons for you, I think. This volume has a couple lessons. And one of them is, don't keep that rage inside, Eric, or it's going to come out eventually. We're going to see a little rancor down the line. And that's pretty much his big thing. He didn't want to have the rage exposed. And then when it did, Eric, it was exposed to the nth degree. But that's down the line, Eric.
I don't expose my rage, I expose other things.
You just expose other things. Well, this volume of Red Lanterns, which started out the New 52, was written by Peter Milligan, art by Ed Bennis. And this whole volume is issues 1 through 7. It's one of those bigger ones, but we're going to have a full-out one-part podcast. I didn't think that this – me and you both agree – this one doesn't deserve to – episodes. Some of the big books that
it's
you know,
for some
we want
reason
to get
right now
depth.
We think that like the Batmans, they deserve the big episodes.
Yeah, the Batmans,
apart.
They
like, the
do.
The Court of Owls, and then we have freaking, I don't even remember what Detective Comics was.
You know, that was
Faces of Death. Yeah, that's right.
Faces of Death, Eric. Maybe we should have skipped that second part of that. Hoo-wee. But yes, we are the guys from Weird Science DC Comics podcast and website. And I just want to mention before we go on, we do have a Patreon account, patreon.com/weirdscience, where you can go and support us. And one of the caveats of supporting us is getting these episodes 2 weeks ahead of the regular schedule so you can be kind of ahead on the deal. So yeah, 2 weeks. Two whole weeks, Eric. But yeah, this Red Lanterns one, written by Peter Milligan, like we said, is one of those that we always heard because I did not really read any Red Lanterns. You know, I kind of dabbled once Charles Soule got involved, but I wasn't in the whole time. Basically, my bit was at the end. You know, when Guy Gardner became a Red Lantern, we were doing kind of the podcast then, I believe, but I kind of got involved then, but I never read Peter Milligan's stuff.
Was one of the things when we started the site in 2013, when, you know, the freaking New 52 was already 2 years deep at this point. And, you know, we weren't doing all the books when we started.
No.
We didn't know exactly what we were doing when we were doing the written reviews of the site and shit like that. Eventually, you know, you had the Green Lantern Corps. I had Green Lanterns and New Guardians. And then we just decided, you know what? This is stupid because the amount of crossovers going on.
Yeah, there was
all
so
the
many
books.
Crossovers.
I took over all the Lantern books. And at that point, I started reading Red Lanterns. And I think that's right as Charles Soule was coming on the book.
Yep.
And so it made sense. Okay, we got a new creative team. Let's jump on. And all I kept hearing as I was, you know, writing the reviews for the Charles Soule run was, oh, dude, you got to go back and check out the Peter Milligan run because it was
Peter
great.
Milligan
and I'm
stuff.
Like, well, all right. I didn't remember it getting great reviews back
when
it was
and,
coming
and
out.
And really, even then, I would tell you, and I think you might agree, it seemed like there was a divided camp. That the people who love Peter Milligan would either not even get involved with the Charles Soule stuff because, oh, you know, that's not hardcore enough. And then the people who love Charles Soule were like, hey, I tried the Peter Milligan stuff. It just didn't excite me. Like, there was really a yin and yang going on with these two that they seem to be polar opposites the way they approach the book. And really, you can only go with the fact or go with the idea that when DC hired Charles Soule, it was to kind of go against what they thought might have been wrong with Peter Milligan's run. And that was, at least in this volume, not a lot going on. It's more of a character study of Atrocitus. It's more of a personal story than a balls-to-the-wall action story.
And that's one of the things where people will complain that there's too many Earth Lanterns. Why don't we deal with other Lanterns and all this other stuff? Is that one of the things that actually took me away from this? Yeah, we had Rancor in the series who wasn't Earth-like Red Lantern.
Yes.
I didn't know him. So when, like, you know, Guy Gardner came on and said, hey, I know Guy Gardner. He's a rageaholic and all this shit. He's going to be a Red Lantern.
Yeah, made sense.
You know what? This is somebody I can, you know, I know and I can get into this story with. So when people are saying there's too many of these Earth Lanterns, it's a way for us to jump into the story and have a character we can relate to or know about who will take us on this journey.
And what Peter Milligan seems to be setting up in this first volume is Rancor, the first Earth Lantern. The thing that surprised me, though, because this is what we had heard, we were told, going back to read this and finally do, you know, getting to read this volume one, it shocks me that it didn't go right away. Like, that Rancor is, you know, he is very meticulous with how he is laying out these characters.
Oh, yeah.
He's taking his time. He is not rushing things. And I think that it might have been one of those because people had been wanting, and I was looking up articles and things, and when the New 52 was just getting announced and books were announced, there were people who were excited and had wanted a Red Lantern book, especially because right before this, you know, you had the War of the Green Lanterns, you had Blackest Night, Brightest Day, and stuff like this, where you had all the cores, like, really in the front, and people getting excited about him. So, like, even when people yell about Now and Rebirth and even the New 52, I want a Shazam book, there were some people, they wanted all these colors of the spectrum to have their books. And I think Peter Milligan was taking it to heart of, I really have to establish this.
I can't gotta just flesh have out the mythology joke. Of this core.
Yeah, because he is fleshing out really Atrocitus mainly. But it is, it's a very... Like I said, it's a slow-moving story that's more about character development than anything else. It did shock me because I thought it was going to be balls-to-the-wall action right away. And what I thought I was going to get from Peter Milligan going into this was just going to be, you know, pretty much straight up like bloodshed everywhere. Like, that's what I thought they were saying about, you know, you got to read this. It's so cool and all this. But no, if you like character work in books, this might be for you. The problem is when it did come out, and the first issue came out on September 14th, 2011, people immediately started pish-poshing it, and it started not getting reviewed pretty much at all. Like, this is one, as we go and I look back at the comic book roundup and check out the reviews, a lot of these books, you know, the first issue would have 40 reviews, and there doesn't seem that we seem to be in a golden age of reviews now, where there is about 70 sites now reviewing it, ours being one of the ones that jumped on as well. Back then, it seemed like maybe about 15 to 20 people, you know, were reviewing stuff. And usually they reviewed the first issue of all the books. It seemed like that was something that most of the things we would have done that, you know, and we try to review everything each week.
We do that now.
But then you can check it out and see how it just dissipates, these amount of reviews down to like three.
Well, that happens with books now, too.
Yeah, but
you know,
I'm saying now it's even worse, though. It's like by issue 7 or even 6, because 7 ended up the arc, but you really they started dropping. But the main issue that I had, just to point out, not well reviewed. It really got ripped apart right away. And it's a shame because I'm not going to tell you that I had a grand old time reading this volume, but it's not bad. You know what I mean? It's not.
I'm telling you, before we got on today, the whole thing is like, you know, reading this thing, you know, issue by issue like this. It's such a weird idea because I probably would have dropped the book, like, you know,
I think I would have,
like 3 issues, something like that, to see how it's going to be laid out, what's going on, so I can make a sound decision in my mind. But looking at the way this is set up and knowing what came from it later on, it really feels like Peter Milligan was taking his time to freaking really have a fleshed out story. And while he was not going for the heavy hits every issue to keep people interested, I think in the long run, all collected, if you just sat down and read this, I think it would have been a pretty well-told story. You know, I haven't gotten all the way through.
I don't have the attention span, Eric. So when I'm reading it, it really, I have to admit, for getting ready for this, I read it a couple times, started reading it, and I got kind of tired at points just because there was nothing to grab on. Now, luckily, since I told you, I really didn't read the series. And another thing I wanted to point out, you did have, when Charles Soule came on and all this stuff, they were already trying to get some things in. You had Supergirl involved. Like, it was obvious that they were trying to grab people after Peter Milligan left. But as I was reading this, if I didn't know about Rancor, and I only know about Rancor from you, I really had never read much with Rancor in it. And it intrigued me, the whole thing about having a Red Lantern that is an Earth Red Lantern. So if it wasn't for me knowing that we see him, because it's, again, it's not the first issue, which shocks me. You don't have all of a sudden, you know, or even what I thought was going into this, this whole first 7 issues would be basically about Rancor, and it's not. But if I didn't know, so then all of a sudden I see these, you know, they go to Earth and I see what's going on. I'm like, ooh, one of these guys is Rancor. Then I look up the name because it is kind of a switcheroo between him and his brother, I guess it was. But even then, if it wasn't for me knowing, like, okay, that's cool, I got to pay attention to this, kind of might have checked out on that part of the story also. I hate to say it. It just, when you read these things all in a row, you do get that vibe of what's going on. And this is, like I said, it's a meticulous character study series. And to start off the new 52, I'm shocked that it wasn't more, you know, action-packed at first and then get to the, you know, character stuff. But as I said,
and the problem
September.
With that character study, because, you know, it is a monthly series at this point. They weren't doing anything double shift at this point. And, you know, going into that, a lot of things are reiterated to the point of nauseam because, you know, you have to make sure that everybody is remembering what's going on. But because of that, it gets a little bit overdone, you know.
Yeah,
the same aspects over and over again as you're going through the story.
The thought of Atrocitus and kind of how he sets him up is really, you know, you really can tell he wants you to really get it pounded in your head what he's thinking, what he wants to do, what led from that. But I guess you need that. This isn't a start of Detective Comics, where you even had the continuity pretty much still in place, or the start of any book, even a Superman book or whatever, where people were like, okay, I know the background, you can go. This is Peter Milligan pretty much laying down the groundwork for that. So I do appreciate that. But like you said, I think I would have dropped this. If I would have lasted a whole, you know, run, this whole run, but this whole volume, seven issues, I don't think I could have made it through. I really don't, but we'll see. But it's a weird thing because I don't think it's bad. It's just kind of not for me, I think, what it is. You know, I need balls to the wall action, Eric. I need to stay awake. And there is explosions. It's weird, but the trade actually was collected and came out June 6th. 2012, and DC described it as this, Aaron. The hit DC Comics, the new 52 series, starring the characters from Green Lantern, Rage of the Red Lanterns, is collected for the first time. Red Lantern leader Atrocitus needs a lieutenant, but does he dare assign that role to the deadly, beautiful Bleez? And pretty much that spells it out pretty good. Now, one thing as we go, there are some things that aren't spelled out that I'll kind of, you know, push later. I'll tell you the one thing particular when it comes to Krona. But the one thing that they did change for this, the main thing, is the sector of Ismalt, which changes from, it was in Earth Sector 2814 before this. They changed it to, like you called it, the Forbidden Sector of 666.
Yeah, Space Sector 666.
Sounds,
you know,
so cool.
I think
that's
they really
so
ruined the
cool.
whole thing because, you know, we have the freaking, was it Ryud, I believe it is, his Atrocitus homeworld.
Yeah.
That was the massacre of that sector, you know, which, like, the Manhunters came and made Atrocitus who he is today. So I think they just really wanted to take everything and keep it in Space Sector 666 for the Red Lantern.
And it's 666.
Exactly.
So it's 666. It's a pretty cool sector. That's a pretty cool
number of the beast.
Yeah, it's cool. But yeah, you do start out in Space Sector 666. And unfortunately, my man Zook, whatever he's doing, he should not be in that sector. You don't want to go into Space Sector 666 and torture people, Eric.
I don't know.
That is not what
unless
you do.
You know about the Red Lanterns, I think if you know the sectors of space and shit like that, look, I'm a guy who likes pain. I'm a sadist.
Yeah.
I like torturing people. I'm going to Space Sector 666 to do it because why not? Come on.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like he knows what he's up to. No. They just go there, and they look like they are like blue reptilian space pirates, it seems.
Yeah.
And this Zook, he is – I think we're seeing the Zook – who cannot smile or laugh, Eric.
Of course
he is. Just like the Joker, because he is upset. Things that he does, the torture, is just not thrilling him anymore. And as they go, and this kind of does play into Atrocitus as well.
The way the rage is settling inside of him.
Yep, and he just, everything, he tortures too many people, Eric. You know, once you torture a lot, I know you've told me this many times in your own private, you know, privately, that your torture, it's just not working anymore. And as they do this, they see a creature approaching. They're in a spaceship and like, hey, a creature's approaching. You know, hey, and like, there's some kind of funny looking creature approaching. And Zook's like, bring it in and may the gods' pain take pity on it. And it ends up being who, Eric? One of your favorite
guys. Dexstar.
Dexstar.
Little kitty cat Dexstar.
Yep. And when you read this first issue, the first page decent, right? It's good. Yeah. When Dexter shows up, awesome. And then when Atrocitus shows up to go after Dexter, freaking incredible.
You don't hurt somebody's kitty cat, man. No. That's just against the rules.
And it's funny, too. You have that little interplay because what happens is they go, Dexter comes in and just starts attacking them then. And you really do have some padded fight going on. It is page after page of just Dexter ripping them apart. But it's fun. You're having some fun
now,
action
there. Did
you
ever watch the movie, the Tales from the Dark Side, the movie?
Yes, yes.
Do you remember the freaking little, because that was an anthology movie. Do you remember the story, The Cat from Hell with William Hickey?
Yes, and you have even told me about it as well. You think that that's what Dexter is?
Yeah,
I love Dexter.
Because the Dexter can't be killed, and he just goes in and murders everybody. Yep. And they're like, they can't, like, the whole idea, too, like, freaking Zook, he has his scalp torn off from Dexter.
Yep,
and it's so funny to me, because I remember when Geoff Johns was coming around, and he was making all these different Lantern Corps. It actually angered me back in the day. Like, who the fuck is this upstart motherfucker to come in here and change my
Lantern
Corps?
You call them the Skittle
Lanterns. The
Skittle
Lanterns were
deal.
All over the internet and shit like that. And it took me a while to get on board with it. Even, like, you know, when I was collecting my DC Universe Classics action figures and shit like that, they came out with a side thing. It was the, like a Green Lantern, like, Classics edition where they had all these different Green Lantern things they were just putting out there. And one of them was Dexter. With, I think, Chip as well or something like that. But I just looked at this cat. I'm like, really? A cat?
How dare you?
What is this bullshit?
Not on my watch. I always think the only thing about Dexter that I find funny is his ring is on his tail. Seems very vulnerable to be ripped off, you know, cut off that tail. But they don't seem to.
Jim, you say that. All the lanterns, whatever you want to freaking believe.
Yeah, because they're all like lizards and things. That's a problem because you don't have a human.
All the green light, I mean, the red lanterns, though, if, like, I don't care, like, if you want to believe that the Red Lanterns are alive because you read the first arc of the Green Lanterns from Rebirth, pretty much everybody died except for maybe Blaze and Dexter. Dexter has survived it all, baby.
Yeah, he has. That is true. But yeah, as they're going on, I do like the interplay that they do that with this with Atrocitus and Dexter, because you have Atrocitus, the rage monster of the universe, the leader of the Red Lanterns, but yet he does have his love of his kitty cat, Eric, and he comes in and basically he's like, what are you doing with my cat? And I do like the fact that you have this where it is a full page. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not even like a double space. It's just the whole page is dominated by Atrocitus.
And Atrocitus
is humongous. Yeah, he's humongous here. And yeah, he just goes, now he goes to town. But really, at the end of all this, when he grabs Dexter and goes to take off, he is also talking too about how the rage just doesn't seem to be working for him anymore. It just, he says, I'm going through the motions. And it made me think of Buffy in the Buffy musical thing where she was doing the same thing. And yeah, he's ripping people apart. He's ripping heads off, slicing things, he's using his acid blood, and it's just not fun for him anymore, and it doesn't mean anything. He does, throughout this whole volume, he's searching for, like, something that has more rage to kind of spark his rage again, because his rage seems to be diminishing, and it really
and
is a crisis
for
him.
About it. Exactly.
Yeah, he doesn't
know
what to do.
It's a self-crisis, because this is all he's been for so long.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have this, what
he's
is
done.
He?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's almost like we say, like, you had during Forever Evil, when you had a Black Manta.
Exactly.
Who's Black Manta without Aquaman? The problem with Atrocitus is his thing is just rage, and he doesn't seem, and he even says, you know, there's so much pain in the universe now that, you know, in his mind, in the way Peter Milligan's writing this, it's like the universe is full of rage,
especially,
and people
Earth
who want vengeance and things like that, but it just doesn't mean anything to him. He kind of does explain a little later.
And
but
I
we
just
do go
imagine
to
too, because when he gets back to Yzmont with Dexter, you know, he's having this crisis within him about this whole deal. And when he just goes back and he sees his Red Lantern Corps that he's put together, and they're just mindless,
they're just retards,
fucking idiots,
that's
just fighting amongst each other.
Why did I say it like that?
It's funny now,
but it
but
is,
no, he
and he's
this,
like, a,
and it's just
yeah.
like. What the fuck am I doing?
Yeah, that's what it seems. When he goes back and sees him, it's almost like you can even go like a step where you would have this in some movies or a story where there's this guy who's leading a gang of criminals and they get done a job and they go back and the guy's just like, why am I hanging out with these motherfuckers? Like, you know, these guys are a bunch of jerks.
Well, not
I
even that.
So
you know what I actually had? I had a freaking realization, too. I told you about this a couple months ago, and I was just sitting down. I was going through some movie stuff like that, and I put on Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, and I've never liked the movie, but I put it on, and I'm just watching it, and I actually said to myself, and it actually bothered me that I said this out loud to myself because it gave me a fucking identity crisis. I'm like, the fuck have you been doing yourself, like, wasting
you
your time with
this?
These bullshit movies for years?
I tell you that all the time.
And freaking, when he goes back to Yisbal and just sees these freaking mindless idiots fighting
basically,
amongst themselves.
It's me and you clocking into work every Monday morning. That's all it is. God. Like, this is what my life has come to. These motherfuckers around me, son of a bitch. But yeah, he's having a quote-unquote, like you said, identity crisis. But we do go to Earth. And knowing that Rancor is going to be part of this book, I was a little excited here, so I'm like, oh, this is going to be awesome. This is where we're going to see Rancor. Eric's always talked about him and said that that was one of the things that kind of, you know, intrigued him about the book. Now, you do get just a quick glance at the beginning. It's an old guy pretty much being mugged who fights back, and then this thug hits him over the head with a brick and basically kills him and starts yelling and screaming. And while this is going on, again—
Because you know why it's a brick, Jim?
Why is that?
Because it's England. They don't have guns there.
That's true. It's a brick. Hard as a brick. He hits him. And this kind of went with the whole thing where Atrocitus had just said there's so much pain in the universe. You see this. And that is the setup for what eventually becomes Rancor. But that's where you have, like we said, Atrocitus comes back with Dexstar, goes to the blood pool, and just sees these red lanterns. Blee's obviously in the forefront. I mean, you know right away, even if you just got involved with this and started reading, you understand that Blee's is going to be, you know, pretty much one of the bigger ones. You have Zilius there. Yeah,
well,
you have some
of
the main guys
there.
Yeah, she does. They go on about how hot she is, and yeah, she's kind of hot, but you know, she's also got freaking bone wings, and she's spitting blood everywhere.
Yeah,
I don't
know. I've been
that,
on
that's kind of column A, column B deal or whatever, plus minus. But yeah, as you go on, just talking about, you know, what are these things doing? You know, they're going around. They have feeble minds. You know, I don't know. Can they sense that I am having this problem? Can they do that? And then that's where Atrocitus walks away and says, you know what, I've had some botchlanders. He's talking about, you know, how he created. You almost get like a Frankenstein type
feel.
Oh, yeah, like,
I'm telling
what
you, this
have
whole
I
idea is something
here?
I never even thought of, where, you know, he has tried to create the red lanterns for such a long time, and they came, you know, when they came back, you know, sometimes dead is better or something like that, Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to go with, the idea that they came back wrong, the idea that always frightens
wrong.
The hell out of me, and he had to kill them, he buried them throughout this fucking valley on Yasmalt. I'm like, that's creepy as fuck, Atrocitus. Yeah. You know, maybe you should change your life around. Maybe you should go back to business school or something. I don't know.
Yeah, really. And the thing,
freaking planet littered with freaking botched experiments, and your best friend is the dead body of Krona.
Yeah, and the thing that I get from this, too, is he's watching, you know, Blee's and Zilius and all these guys, and they're just rage fucking retards, and they're going around. They're the ones that worked. That's the good ones. Then he starts talking about these, you know, all these things that didn't work, these botched things, and I'm like, hoo-wee, I hate to see what they were. But obviously, when you go through this later, you realize that he can make them better. He just don't want to at this point because he's worried that maybe they'll take over.
Well,
and
who doesn't
want any competition?
Well, he's the smartest guy in the room.
He's the smartest guy in the room, indeed. But he does go then to talk to Krona. And it's kind of like, instead of having full out, you know, word bubbles and narration, which it is very heavy with.
Oh, yeah.
He also has a thing where he has the body of Krona there to talk about. And Krona, he blames Krona for the death of his family, pretty much everything that made him become a Red Lantern. This is the guy who he had the rage for. He wanted to kill Krona. Unfortunately, he never got the chance. And it's a huge thing for him because during this, and we talked about this in our Green Lanterns deal, during the what was the War of Green Lanterns? I was freaking almost said the rage, but it's the War of Green Lanterns. I don't even know what I'm thinking of. But the War of Green Lanterns was the story that led into the New 52, and at the end, Hal killed Krona. And you do see Hal here. The thing that I thought was not spelled out that I said earlier that actually shocked me was the idea of, if you're sitting there reading this and you see that Hal, he does, you see Hal did it, and basically he says he took away what I wanted to do. That was his life quest, was to kill Krona, and it was snatched away from him when Hal did it. That's why Hal lost the ring.
I'm saying at least Ganth, you know, honored his promise for doing
that's the thing.
Gave him the body of
Krona.
That's the
weird thing that I didn't think it was spelled out enough, because Ganthet did have a pact with him, and a pact that, you know, he would get Krona's body. And Ganthet went against the wishes of the rest of the Green Lanterns. They actually took Krona and were going to give him a full out Guardians burial in the temple and all that. And there was a lot of discussion and say, oh, this is bullshit, he's a villain. And they're like, no, he helped as well, we're going to honor that. Ganthet just grabbed the body and gave it to Atrocitus to keep them at bay, to kind of keep the Red Lanterns away from them and not start a war. The problem is, it seems like it's one of those things for Atrocitus. It's like, you know, when the guy who gets everything he wants, you know, now he doesn't know what to do because he is upset about it. And then you go and you see he has a vision, and he's thinking about what happened and what led to that. And you see that Krona doing the Manhunters going to his, you know, home world, killed his wife and daughter, the whole planet destroyed.
Look, there's Manhunters here. They were there before the Green Lanterns, Jim, no matter what Sam Humphries wants to fucking
he
tell
may
you.
Tell us this or that, but there are Manhunters there. And it's cool because now you can have this. That's what the Manhunters are great for, something like this, because I don't like the idea with Sam Humphries. Sam Humphries tried to do the same exact thing for this in the one issue of his when you had Simon. Actually, that was Justice League, where, you know, Simon
It was Brian Hitch and the Green Lanterns and the Guardians went in there and extinguished an entire fucking planet because
they destroyed
all taken
an entire
over.
Planet. This is what the Manhunters are good for. So you can have villains like this, or bad anti-heroes, whatever you would call Atrocitus, be mad at the core, but still have the core intact as good guys. Because it was Manhunt.
It's not even the core that he's made. It's just the Guardians.
The Guardians
built these.
And that's what
things.
I like.
Krona's the one who reprogrammed him to freaking come and do this.
Yes, and that's what I think the greatness of the Manhunters is, that you can see. And even when you take steps from that, then you can go, whoa, and then they realize this wasn't the right thing, so then the Green Lantern Corps and all that, it makes complete sense to me. Sam Humphries kind of has taken that away,
and
it does
piss us off. I love the Manhunters. I love their look, and I really love everything about them, because, look, even in the beginning of the New 52, what's going on right now, like, you know, in this timeline that we have, you know, we're about to get into the Third Army arc in the Green Lantern book in the New 52, and you can't have a Third Army if there was never a First fucking Army.
Yeah, it really throws things. You need the Manhunters.
But going into this whole flashback of Atrocitus, I think the Manhunters might have done him a favor, because I'm looking at his fucking big-eyed fucking daughter, and I'm like, you need to kill that thing.
You don't. She's such a cutie. Look at her. That's just a look of surprise.
That's the look of a monster. That's a look of drinking while pregnant.
Really? That looks to me like me when I get to the buffet. Or you as a kid for Christmas Day, because you always got what you wanted.
That's
right?
Just my eyes with my big-ass magnifying glasses.
Yeah, that, or that's that Christmas that you just got board games but had no friends. That's the look of fear and anger and being just upset. But yeah, she's dead. And this kind of ties into another girl later on in this volume. But we then go back to Earth, and you see that
we're exploring a lot of stuff with Atrocitus and how he deals with rage now, what he's going to do going forward. And when we go, like, you know, we just had Zook there. It's all just really nothing in the long run for what we're doing.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, because then we go back to Earth, and now we're going to see more of the beginnings of Rancor, but it's so slow-paced and so nothing that you can't really, like, oh, man, this guy's going to be cool, because at this point he ends up going, he shows up at his, and his name's John, he shows up at his grandfather's hospital room. He's dead. He has died. Now, his grandfather at this point, buff as hell. I could see how he fought back, Eric. This is a strong man.
He was a vet.
Like 70, he said. But yeah, his brother, I believe it's Ray, is there as well. And his brother is a hothead and wants vengeance right away.
And it's really funny the little bit that, you know, Peter Milligan does here, because you're expecting the freaking hothead
the
brother Ray to be the freaking Red Lantern.
Yep, you expect Ray to be the one who is all fired up, and he's the one, but it's not. It is actually John, who is a student. He didn't get there before his grandfather died, because he had to work on a thesis. But it's the main thing in the background is he's keeping all this anger inside, which ends up being part of when his mom ended up dying as a kid and they were raised by his grandfather. So that, you know, was the beginning of those two, kind of Ray being the guy who's going to have his emotions out and about.
The outward
emotions screen.
And then the inward and, emotions of John, yeah.
You have John who was keeping it inside and even led to him being bullied, but we'll get to that later. But yeah, at this point, Ray just, you know, punches John right in the face and he's pissed off. Because he wants vengeance. He wants the person who did that to their grandfather to die. And as
it's
this
such
is going on.
It's such an odd idea, too, because as we're going, they seem to know who the fucking guy was.
Yeah,
but
yeah, they do.
Doing anything
and
about
even
it.
At one point, he shows up and the guy's like, what, do you have video? I'm like, how does he even know? But it looked like, to me, I think they ended up catching this guy. And then he got off because there wasn't enough evidence. Because they do kind of point. I don't know.
I don't know either.
It isn't played out well.
Ray went around the neighborhood and said, oh, yeah, this guy mugs people all the time. He's a fucking asshole. You know, so he goes to this house with a goddamn firebomb. But I'm like, well,
yeah.
We didn't get enough of this story because you just show up at the guy's house like you know who the hell it is. It's such
well,
a
I
idea.
Think that what happened is, Eric, because as they come out of the hospital and they're talking about, you know, Ray's like, if a 73-year-old pensioner can put up a fight, so can we. Pandora agrees over there in the alley, Eric.
Oh
she's
my God,
standing.
I forgot that's where, all about
yeah,
Pandora.
That's where
again.
She is. She's just, and it's funny because nobody else on the street except Pandora in the distance, and she looks like she has an octopus feet. It's crazy. She looks like she even looks like
That's
she might be
quote,
a rocket
Jim.
Ship. I'm telling you, it looks crazy. But there she is. She's watching.
I'm the one with the bad vision. You're going octopus and rocket ship.
I'm telling
ship.
You, I'm she has a she's a rocket ship octopus. The top looks good. It's just the bottom is a little off. But yeah, Ray is gonna go and take vengeance for this. In the meantime, you go back and you have Atrocitus still yelling at Krona and does. Put his fist through him and says, you know, what kind of fucking universe is this? You know, you have a universe where the dead still bleed and stuff because he does have this disgusting looking
yellow. He tears into freaking Krona's body and, you know, the Guardians do have yellow blood.
Yeah.
So when he tears in this dead body that I'm assuming has been dead for a while now,
yes,
but
it looks dead
it is
for a while.
Still bleeding. It is
yep,
still,
it's still
full
bleeding.
Of goddamn goo. And he's like, what the hell is this?
And I think that Peter Milligan, I think that's a cool idea for him just to be able to have Atrocitus, you know, do the blood pact and see the blood visions or, you know, that whole thing without having to go and find somebody to kill. You know what I mean? It's
well,
just
that's the
always
mainstay of the whole thing, the blood magic and shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the blood magic.
Because even before that, like, he has a little taste of it when, like, one of those freaking, like, I don't even know what the hell they're called. The little blood fucking pockets that
yeah,
are like,
the
explode
yeah,
and hits
the
in his
pack.
Goddamn face.
Yeah.
And he gets a little taste of a vision. So he's like, I'm going to use Krona's goddamn
yeah.
blood.
I just like it because he ends up being an unlimited supply of blood. He's just there next to the blood pool. And anytime you want to see something, and in my mind, it's funny, I take it that it's because – it's not only Krona who's a guardian, which maybe his blood is a little better, but it's also I'd the blood so. Of the thing that fuels his rage the most. So I think it's a pretty
Look,
cool idea
you,
that
you... You got a lot of stuff going on. You have the idea of the guardian's blood. This is the guardian that, you know, mistakenly created the multiverse when he needed to go back and see
I'm telling you, these blood
and
visions and magic,
rage.
It has to be... The best blood magic ever with this blood that he uses. And he says, you know, it's a dead body that keeps bleeding. It's kind of a cool little thing that he has. But as he goes, he sees, you know, there is just shit all around the universe of just bad people
and
rage.
The thing is, for the most part, we see this. We see one alien world. The rest just looks like Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look at because, you know, Earth's a bunch of pieces of shit. But he's like, I see it. You know, the universe is crying out to me.
My fire rages once more. I see the path I must take.
Yep. And basically he has to, you know, listen. And he says, I'll need my red lanterns. And then you go back to them and they are just having a party. They're just there
and
fighting
now,
at the blood pool, throwing each other in and out
that's
of it,
the thing
spitting.
Is, I have one problem with this bit because where we go forward with the idea that we're going to use the freaking the ocean of blood.
Yes.
To, like,
you think
you know,
that when Blaze throws the guy in that he should have come back intelligent? Is that what you think?
At least a bit more because I don't know. We don't ever see, you know, Atrocitus do anything different.
Yeah, you think that there would be some sort of ceremony,
there.
But you don't see it. Yeah, I thought that too. Later on, I'm like, wait a minute, please throw him in. Now, eventually, they all kind of get their wits to them for the most part. But yeah, at this point, Atreus is like, you know what? I have my Red Lanterns. I need them. But do they need me? And again, this whole first issue, there was kind of like a identity crisis of him and him needing to be kind of, you know, convinced,
be
at least just for himself.
He must go on because he no longer knows what's right.
But then you start out and reading it as a trade, you said it before. Now you get recap, and it's recap of his emotions. And, you know, it's only one page, but it is just like, you know what? How am I Atreus to fulfill my mission, to seek justice at such a cacophony? Which injustice should I do? And this issue to me really goes towards the fact of what is vengeance, and does it, rage beget more rage? And it really does seem like another bit of a crisis for him.
And even this whole thing of being reminded about his daughter and shit, that when we go to freaking what is it, the Gan 9, and I'm like, all this Gan 9 stuff, it is filler.
Yeah, it is. And but it basically, it's all to set up the idea of who one person's freedom fighter is another's you know, freaking terrorist and things like that, because it's a war that's being torn apart and somewhat of a civil war type deal where both sides just think the others are pieces of shit. And you do end up having this thing where one of the soldiers of the one side ends up killing a little girl's family. But who's right and wrong?
Even the whole idea, you don't get a freaking clear, like, you know, I don't know. Usually when you look at a comics, you got a good guy, you got a bad guy, you got shades of gray and shit like that. Because when you look at these troopers that are going in there trying to, you know.
Yeah, the one that ends up being the one who Atreus then attacks seems like a good enough guy.
Yeah, he's been getting shit because he believes that these people, you know, they're not as bad as everybody makes them out to be. I do feel sorry for him, all this stuff. So when it comes down that, you know, him and his partner both, they gun down in their ship, you know, kids who they think are soldiers, like, you know, rebel soldiers with weapons.
Yeah.
He is legitimately upset when he finds out the truth. He's not celebrating his friend. It's like the piece of shit of these two seems to get it off really easy compared to the guy who's more.
Well, he just seems to die in a crash and just die, it seems. But even so, this definitely is a take on the whole 9/11 stuff. And, you know, it's 10 years later when he wrote this, Peter Milligan wrote it. But it is one of those things where, you know, you had the terrorists, they attacked the U.S., but that was just a couple guys. Does that mean that a family in the middle of freaking Iraq is bad? You know what I mean? They're just there living their life. And this is what it kind of pushes at, where, you know, you said the one guy at Knapp is just like he's getting shit from everyone and basically saying, like, they're not all bad. Our enemy aren't all bad. There's just certain guys that we can fight and whatever. But in the most part, they're just like me and you. And they're like, oh, how is it with your buddies on the other side and stuff like that? And then, of course, they get attacked. And they're like, you know, now they're, yeah, see what happens when you trust them, Nap? Now we're going to kill them. And they go in. And it's one of those where they just start opening fire, and they think that these kids have guns. They're actually sticks, you know. And really, this Knapp guy is not bad.
No,
it is a very gray area. Yeah.
And the thing is, his partner is like all like rejoicing.
Oh, his partner's his partner's like the guy in Full Metal Jacket who's just shooting at people working in the fields. That's all that guy is. He's a piece of shit. But yeah, it ends up that this girl, her dad was already killed. He was already martyred.
Yeah.
And you had her brothers and maybe cousins, whatever it is, but the other kids that were boys were like, hey, we got to take care of you. We're the men of the house now. And then they all get killed, and that she gets upset and rages out and yells death to the Uvers or Evers, who are these bad guys to her. And I think that the thing, obviously, this is just a setup for Atreus to go there and be reminded of his daughter again. Because
and we just had that. Yeah, so, you know, going from one issue to the next where we have this whole civil war going on that really means nothing, because all it is doing is reiterating something that we already found out, if you're just jumping into this blind, last issue.
Yeah, and Atreus goes there. He takes care of the one pilot in this, you know, spaceship type deal, this carrier thing, and throws him, and he's dead. And then this Knapp, that guy's name's Har, because Knapp yells Har. And then he starts, the guy has some balls. He just starts yelling, you know. That guy was 20 years old. He hadn't even started living, you vicious, ugly monster. And this is where Atreus, I think the main thing of this whole issue is the fact of, it's not black and white. Like, that's what Atreus wants. That's what I think Atreus needs. The way his rage has kind of dissipated, and he wants it. He needs to have rage at those people and know that those people are good. These are the pieces of shit. The problem is this really points out to him, because as it goes, this guy happened to have a wife and kid at home. And that's what he said earlier. It was said, I want to just get home. I want my tour to end so I can go back to my wife and my kid. And when Atras is like, you know what? You piece of shit, you killed this little girl's family. And then he says, Knapp says, well, where's my vengeance then? When you kill me, who's going to get vengeance for my family? Who's going to get it against you? And it really does make Atrocitus kind of step back. Now,
he does immediately murder him, but there's rules.
You still follow the rules. And the rule is, you're dying. And he just says, you know what? Nope, it's all your fault. Boom, he kills him. But then it's funny, too, because he kills him, and then immediately, that guy makes a good point. And he says, does rage simply beget more rage? Now, it kind of took me aback a little, because it's kind of a dangerous thing for the leader of the Red Lanterns to start thinking like this. It really is. Like, he should not care.
These are the kind of thoughts that, you know, would, like, you know, lead to him thinking that the rest of his mindless lanterns that he turns, you know, like, you know, gives intelligence later on,
that maybe he shouldn't
go against me because I'm having impure, unraged thoughts.
He is having weird thoughts, because in the main thing, Atrocitus should be like, you know what? That's what I want. Rage does beget rage. That's what I like. I like the rage. I need it. And to the point where this would, what you know, it would drive him to do stuff like this. He's starting to think, I just love that he just burns the shit out of this guy with the acid fucking blood.
The napalm blood.
And then just says, makes a good point. I wish he gave the guy a high five, his burning fucking carcass. But he's like, this is where it came from. This is the source, the pure rage. This little girl comes out. And she comes out, and, you know, you get right away. That's where Atrus is like a little girl with a doll, just like his daughter. You get this whole thing. But the wraparound is he's there to take this girl, or at least then, you know, she avenged the death. She's scared. She runs away. Yeah. She gets
scared. He's a fucking monster. Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, everybody's a monster in this.
It's
such a weird concept that I'm telling you, these aren't great individual issues, but the idea that I get from what we're doing here for the long end of the story, it really is a cool idea, because have these rage lanterns, these red lanterns, who do want to go out through the universe and make sure that justice is served through vengeance and rage and all that shit. But everything they do is going to cause more rage somewhere else. So no matter what they do, there's always going to be injustice and fucking harm in the universe because they can't freaking win.
And I think that if you're listening and you've never read any Red Lanterns and things like that, and you only had them through, say, even if you joined on in Rebirth, and you only had them through the beginning of the Green Lanterns arc, you don't really get a lot of the idea of the vengeance. It's really, to me, going in thinking about, you know, the Red Lanterns, it was just rage. Like, they would just go out and kill people for no reason and stuff. You really do see that it's not like that. There's something more to it. Before the little girl runs away, it is a little creepy, because there is Atrocitus, and he sees, like, this pure rage that pretty much called him through the universe to come to her from this little girl, and he thinks that maybe I should take her back. Maybe I should take her back and maybe make her a Red Lantern, because this is what I need. I need something like this pure rage, and maybe I can just. And then she just runs away, and he's just standing there. He's like, sorry. And then he goes, but you go back, and I'm telling you, every time you go back to the freaking Ismal, it's God just a party. It's a fucking party of them just, it's like a frat party with fucking blood instead of goddamn grape and grain.
Every time
I'm telling
you,
same results at the end.
Fucks are always in a mosh pit for some
fucked up
reason.
Oh my God, they're just going to town. And there you go. You have them go back to Krona. I wish Krona would wake up and just say, motherfucker, you keep telling me the same goddamn shit. Because, he's like, indeed, Gan 9 was indeed the universe in miniature. Conflict, pain, heartbreak, a cacophony of rage. We've heard all this. Yep. This is where I think that with a little different editing and a little different, you know, cut some of this stuff out. Maybe every two issues down would be actually just like an issue and a quarter. So you can kind of – it really could have been a lot better. I think that the part where you just get Atrocitus, go back to Ismal and just fucking talk about things that we've seen and going. But he says to Krone at this point, I think what I need is one of these goddamn, you know, we need somebody who can lead or at least fall in the line, make these other lanterns fall in line. I need a general.
Guy, he made it realize that, you know, it's a complex universe. Yeah. I believe that if I am to fulfill my mission, I will need assistance, the kind neither wild creature nor frightened child can offer me. I need some intelligent assistance.
Yes. And he says, I think I need to make one of my lanterns here, have a little consciousness, and also almost an equal. I like that he says that. I'll bring one of them to be almost my equal. Now the only question that remains, which one to choose. And you see them. I'm like, it's not going to be Zilia Socks there. A big fucking madball over there. I'm sorry, my friend. It's not going to be that. You see Bleez there, and you know it's going to be Bleez. But yeah. And in fact, it is. But yeah, that's the end of the second issue. When you move to the third, it basically starts right away. He's grabbed her and thrown her into the pit or into the blood ocean. And the problem is, I think that he should have shown something a little before, like you said. You're going right to the end of what might have been a big ceremony, might have been something that he said or did
something
or had
I
to
hope,
do.
Something I hope, because we deal with blood magic so much in the Red Land,
yeah,
in the book. It's just that having this blood ocean where they're constantly just fighting each other. It looks like they fucking have chicken fights and shit in this goddamn thing, as far as I know.
They're doing everything. It's nonsense.
Just getting thrown in this thing, you think you would have had some goddamn Red Lanterns together who accidentally made themselves smarter.
You know what I would have done, actually? The way you don't even have to change anything, but have a swirl of Krona's blood going around her as she goes in, including her blood and the blood around her, I thought would have been a cool deal. And then you realize that he used some blood magic as well to do this. Could have been an easy thing. And you kind of did set that up with him digging into Krona with that goddamn yellow blood, that nonsense.
Or just putting the ring to the freaking blood, like, and doing the oath or something like that. Yeah. Just something that allows you to know that things are different now, and this isn't always the way it is, because if it is, you should have some smart ass. They're just playing dumb at this point, because everybody's been thrown in this fucking pool.
Thrown in. They keep knocking each other into that pool. I mean, they're like you said, it's chicken fight central around here. Even as Atrocitus is just looking down into the pool.
They can't make out right sentences or words or anything like that, but you know they're freaking doing that goddamn unintelligible Marco Polo that.
Oh, yeah. They're like, hit some, and then it's fucking wrong turn family out there. That's basically all it is. But yeah, like you said, at some point, every one of these fucking mindless motherfuckers is going to trip and fall in that pool and then come out like, the fuck are we doing? Now they're actually just fucking, it's all a ruse. Like, they sit there and talk about things. They have a book club and things during the regular day. Atrocitus comes up. They just start fighting each other.
Dummy up, everybody.
It's fuck. It's the retarded Toy Story is going on around this goddamn blood pool. But yeah, they're doing this. And as you know, everything's happened to Bleez down in this blood ocean, the blood pool. They are still just going at it around there. Just, it's amazing somebody doesn't fall in with her, because they're just going to town. The big problem, though, is Bleez is down there. She's starting to get her mind back. And the problem is what she explains when she comes out. This is one of those monkey paws. She is going to be pretty much the second most intelligent, maybe the most intelligent, Eric, but of all Ismalt. But she also remembers her pain. And she says later, because you do go and you get as this is going on, you see in her mind what happened. A yellow lantern killed her mother and cut off her wings is basically the thing that goes on. And yeah, she's remembering this and she's screaming out in pain in the pool. But then you go back to Earth, and that's where you said Ray, who was, you know, the one brother with John, whose grandfather had been killed, shows up at this guy's house. The guy is a Mohawk, Eric. That just shows you he's guilty. That's all
I know.
He's a bad dude. And he shows up and he's like, "You hear me, Baxter?" So he knows, you know, maybe like you said, maybe there was word on the street. A piece of shit like Baxter is one who would run his mouth, right? He'd be there fucking talking to people. Okay, Baxter, I can tell him, that guy. He has a wife beater on, too. But he's like, "Listen, you killed my old, you killed an old man. I hear you did that." And he's like, "What do you got, proof? You have photographic evidence? I didn't think so." And he slams the door in his face. And this is where he has a Molotov cocktail.
My favorite part of this, though, is where he has the Molotov cocktail.
That looks like it's burning the shit out of everything. It looks like it's going to blow up in his hand.
That's the thing is, his brother John runs up and knocks it out of his hand before he can throw it at the house. But it still hits the street. There's a gigantic fire. And I'm really happy, because while they are fighting over this whole thing, like, you know, what the right thing to do about this whole thing is, whether you should take justice into your own hands.
Yep.
I was sitting to myself, the fuck are the goddamn cops at? Why isn't anybody getting, like, you know, anybody calling the cops, the fire department? Why
they show up?
And exactly, when they do show up, I'm like, thank God.
Yeah. Yeah, the only thing that I think that they should have spelled, it's like, this looks like an apartment building. You know, even if it's not, he's going to kill like 17 people on this block. It's just nonsense. But that's part of it. He's raged out. He really is. Yeah. That's where John shows up. And he's like, listen, don't do this, you bloody fool. And he's like, you'll end up in prison. And Ray's like, I don't care. God damn it, you don't care. And then John just goes to town, starts beating him up. He gets Ralphie on him and starts just beating him up. And that's where Ray's like, look, see, you're just like me. You're just as angry. You're just a coward. You don't admit it. And, you know, it's okay, see. And I just laugh, though, when he lit that Molotov cocktail. When you see it looks like it's already burning his hand. That thing should have fucking exploded as Ron turned.
But I'm telling you, when we get back to Ray and John, the whole thing, you know, Ray, you are all fucking tough, because when the freaking cops are after Ray, then he goes to justice. You gotta hide me, bro. I can't go to jail. Yep.
That's what happens. He's a coward, but you go back to his malt and you do have Blease come out. And she has. And I thought even before, while she was down, before she had the vision of, you know, her mom dying and things like that, I thought it was a pretty good way how they did it, how Peter Milligan did her sentences as they were coming together. It was a pretty cool thing of seeing her each time she talked or thought in her mind, things became more coherent. I thought that was a pretty cool thing. But yeah, the monkey paw is, she now remembers all her pain and says to Atrocitus, you know what, you gave me back my pain. I think that I'd rather have been one of these mindless fools doing chicken fights down here in this mindless frenzy. I was in a cocoon from all of my terrible memories. And Atrocitus starts the abuse of Blease here. Yeah, and it just continues. He is not nice. He needs her to do something for him. At one point, I thought that they were about to get sexy, too, because they're there, and he's like, listen.
You always think they're about to get sexy.
Here it is. You'll get over it, please. We all have to. Now help me stop my Red Lantern squabbling. And she says, I can't do that. And she said, and it's funny because she's definitely playing him here. It's like, this is like, I got a headache. Because she's like, the shock of recovering my intellect, you see.
Oh, my.
It's left me too weak to do anything. And I think that you're supposed to read it like that. And he's like, too weak? Whew, quite traumatized. And he's like, huh. And then he says, I know a way to alleviate your trauma. I'm like, they're about to fuck. They're about to make love, my friend. Because I really thought it was going to be like working it out. It really
you're going into that. My favorite thing about this whole thing, when Blease first comes out of the blood pool, is that she looks around. What an ugly guy.
Oh, yeah. She's like, holy shit. What the fuck?
Your place is a piece of shit.
This is definitely her version of waking up the next day, where you took home a guy or a girl the night before, and you're like, whoa, wait.
Oh, it's Coyote Ugly Time.
I don't remember that. Because, yeah, she comes out and she's like, what the fuck have I been looking at all this time? I guess, you know, you don't see things like this when you're partying down at the blood pool. But, yeah, they're there. They go back to Havania. Havania, Eric, which Havania? Is Blease's Havania. It's her home planet. That's where Atrocitus is going to take.
This is a weird thing, because you could say whatever you want about the goddamn blood visions or magic, whatever you want to do. This whole idea where out of nowhere, okay, I brought Blease.
He knows
back
everything
downtown.
That went down.
He knows everything that went down, and it's just, oh yeah, I recently discovered something about the member of the Sinestro Crew. You became your unwanted suitor and shit like that. Yeah. Hey, check this out. Everything you know is a lie. These other motherfuckers on your planet who you turned down.
Yeah, they
thought
actually,
you were a bitch. So yeah. They actually went to the Sinestro Corps member and put him onto the whole thing about how, hey, guess what? She's too pretty for you. She turned you down flat and led this whole thing to happen just because they were pissed off that she didn't choose them as her suitor.
Yeah, it's the basic trope. It's the trope that they went in and like, you know, hey, you ever hear this Blease? Yeah, she's pretty, right? Yeah, she is pretty pretty. Never mind, friend. You're not good enough for her. What? I'm good enough for her? No. She would tell you that you're terrible and really fire this guy
and
up.
I'm telling you, I don't know how the freaking, you know, the civilization is on Havania and shit like that, but she's Havania. All like, when she's remembering back to when she turned these like guys down, she's like, you want my hand? Please. I would rather be buried alive and eaten by blind slugs than spend one night with you. And then when it goes back to, I let them down as easy.
He's like,
I
let them down easy. I think Blease is just a bitch. I mean, that's how she is and how it is on this planet, I guess. I just like the fact that he's like, your home world of Havanya. Let me tell you a little about this planet. Because he's saying, like, there used to be an entertainment satellite, sometimes frequent. I just wonder, like, yeah, I lived here. When I was here, bitch. I've heard about that. Belize was a very beautiful woman on this planet. In fact, these two seem to be higher ranking. A baron even wanted to marry her, and she turned him down. And they couldn't go and just kill her because they would have faced the executioner's block. So they went to the strip club, found this yellow lantern who was obviously drinking up, and said the whole thing, like, yeah, she wouldn't go for you. After they set him up, like, man, she's the best, she's awesome, never mind, you're not good enough for her, she'd even tell you that. And he gets pissed, and that's what happens then. And like you said, it's funny that he does say, she says, please, I would rather be buried alive and eaten by blind slugs than spend the night with you. And then it goes back to her. I let them down as gently as I could. How was I to know they'd be so oversensitive? And I thought that was pretty funny. Find out.
But no, when she gets back, she finds out about this. She goes and visits the crypt of her mother, and she, like, spits on her fucking remains because, like, she also blames her mother for this.
For turning her into basically a whore, even.
That's the thing. It's her mother freaking set this whole up where she always wanted her to have a suit. Yeah. Freaking put her on this pedestal and make, like, you brought
in. And this is
that,
what
so
got them all dead. She's
and
now
because
a
of this,
red
bam, now, like, she's a red lantern. Her mother's dead. It caused this rage inside of her. And after this whole thing of taking, you know, showing respect by fucking telling her mother, you're a piece of shit, you did this to me. Now it's time to go kill the other piece of shit that actually went along and did this to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and even at the point where I said Atrocitus just abuses Blease, he's choking her out. At this point, because she's like, you know, I'm not going to take your grating voice and foul breath and all this, and I've had enough of you. I'm going to my mother's tomb. I'm going to sit there. And they're like, no, you're not doing this. There's no sentiment. You know, you don't have sentiments for things and stuff like that. You know, don't be sentimental. You're a red lantern. We don't do this bullshit. And he's about to choke her out until she reminds her, like, all you do is fucking bitch and moan about your fucking mother, your wife,
like,
and kid.
You of all people appreciate the importance of the dead. Isn't your entire existence built around veneration for your own long dead forebears? Yep. You know what? All right.
It's funny too, because he's about to kill her. It looks like he is about to rip her head off. And he said, and he just throws her down and, like, just be quick. And I'm like, you are setting it up for her to just hate your guts. But yeah, she
and
goes.
Not only that, be able to play the shit out of you.
Yeah, that's what she does. And it starts in this issue even. But yeah, you have a very odd transition.
Silver-tongued devil, please.
Yeah, because she spits on her mother's corpse and then just says, you old fool, it was your constant efforts of getting me married off that led to all my misfortunes. So she's throwing it all at her mother. And she's crazy. She's a crazy woman, because then Atrocitus is suddenly behind her and she's like, all right, I'm quite done here. She's all happy.
He looks upset now.
Yeah. He's like, what the fuck have I done? But it goes very quickly from there to them in full attack mode. They're attacking, you know, where these guys who set her up, you know, the whole deal. And they know she's coming. They're trying to get the hell out of town. It
and
makes me laugh.
They're very nonchalant about this whole thing, too. Because if for some reason, even though they know this is coming, that she's killed people, she's on her way there, her and this other monster... Well, we're just going to discuss this for a while. And it's not until,
like,
they fucking make their way in, like, oh shit, let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, they're just discussing it, like, I don't understand how she can connect us to that Sinestro Corps brute. Like, I don't know. I wish I would have, been there. They start fucking going because, like, hey, I wish I would have been there when the guy tore her wings off. I mean, they're having a grand old time.
I heard
as
they're doing more creative
ways. Yeah, they're under
ways.
Attack, and they're just, And then at the
it
one
must
point,
have
they're
been
like,
so delicious.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you hear this, rah, like the screaming or whatever. That must be them. Maybe we should leave for my country estate. Yeah, I don't
and
think you're getting there, buddy.
Fucking Blease is there and cuts the dude's head off. I'm like, why would
Rips
you just
the guy's head
all
off.
Nonchalant just discussing how great her torture was, you pieces of shit.
Yeah, and it's so funny to me because this next scene then, because she kills one of the guys and then the other guy's still there, and she's setting up this whole thing. And to me, it's like, this has happened in many a movie, but it actually for some reason reminded me of Pulp Fiction. Well, you know, you have, Vague Vince and Samuel Jackson's guy driving driving and you have the guy in the back seat, and then all of a sudden by accident, yeah, Marvin gets his head blown off. Now, this is on purpose, but it made me laugh because it's all this talk, and Bleas is like, listen, I'm not going to kill you now. What's going to happen is I'm going to eventually I will return and I will kill you when you least expect it, but you're going to spend every single waking moment thinking I'm right behind you, going to kill you, and then Atrocitus kills him. He puts his hand right through him. Yeah, and he's like, listen, we don't play these games. There's no pity here. And she's like, you stupid son of a bitch. This was better than what you did. I wasn't pitying him. I was setting up him to have a fucking life of just misery. And really, to me, I think that she was going to go with that he may have even killed himself eventually just yeah. because he's so upset about that. And, you know, you can go around with something like that being the worst thing.
And I thought it was so funny. Like, I'm telling you, they're setting this up, like, bit by bit. But in my mind, this is where you realize that, yeah, I think Atreus has left her in the blood pool a little bit too long because she seems smarter than him now.
And like, seems, you know, way she's smarter realizing, than like, him.
All right, you know what? I think I might know what's better for the Red Lanterns than Atrocitus over here.
Yeah, yeah. It's obvious to me that she is way, way smarter. Now, that's the problem is he throws her in the pit. I wouldn't think that he knew how smart she was in normal everyday life. And so when he throws her in, I would guess that you come back a percentage of whatnot. She was way smarter than him in life, so there's no way. She's just smarter, and he starts to worry.
She knows that she has the freaking the other Red Lanterns. While they are still mindless fucking goons,
yeah, they'll follow her.
They follow her right now.
Yeah, even she fucking goes back there. They go back to Ismael. She goes up there and tells them all. It seems like she told them all to take a knee. And they're working out. This is a halftime speech she's doing to them. They're all just there. Pretty much, you want to see what it looks like. Almost looks like they're bowing to her, at least going down, you know. And that's where Atrocitus sees that. And he starts worrying now. And he's like, huh, I'm impressed and encouraged by all this. It looks like she's gotten all these guys in line. But then she turned and smirked at him. And that's when he's like, I don't know. Maybe when she was just pretending to – maybe she was one of the chicken fighters that fell in already. Like, and then when he put her back, it made her smart.
What if Bleas created the upheaval of the Red Lanterns in the first place that
that's
caused
what he
them
thinks.
To do all this shit?
Yeah, he thinks that possibly she's the one. So it's almost like, again, I keep throwing out these references, but it's almost when Homer ended up becoming – when Smithers went away and Homer became Mr. Burns' assistant.
Right.
And they were like, oh, the plant's going well now. It's going so well. And everything that was going well was because Homer wasn't causing the problems that he was before. So it was like a setup. But yeah, this is the setup to me that they were the ones who were always going to be okay. She was riling them up constantly. Now that she's not, she can just get them in line because they're not so riled up. And really, when you go back and see everything that we've had in the first three issues, anytime there was those parties going on, she was right in the middle, fucking yelling and screaming and dancing and prancing. And yeah, he's like, I think that maybe she played me. this might be trouble.
Hey, Krona, old dead buddy over here who I like talking to. Yeah, I think I might have fucked up.
Yeah, I think I did. And just has Dexter there. He's like petting
Come
him.
Come here,
and,
kitty cat. Tell
and
me
that he's like
okay.
the only one. Like, you're the only one I can trust, Dexter, you son of a bitch. But yeah, he's like, I realize I'll have to be careful of Bleas. Very careful. And then you have a final cliffhanger, you know, page with her butt cheeks, Eric. You got the butt cheeks
really
with the thong.
I know, they're really making them butt cheeks fucking prominent.
Yeah, I don't even know. If you want to ask me, it'd be funny. He's writing the script and he's like, you know, Atrocitus says, and I realize I will have to be careful of Bleas. Very careful. Please show something that is what will, like, drive Atrocitus to keep wanting her around. Butt cheeks, Eric. That is
Panel
what's going to keep her around.
Bleas is in front of everyone. We are prominent on her butt cheeks while we see everyone around her.
And then you'll realize why Atrocitus would follow her. But yeah, he's very upset and thinks that maybe she played him. So we're going to see that work out. We're still dealing at this point with the Rancor, the origin of Rancor, stuff like that. And up at this point, this is where the Bleas stuff actually came about in this kind of at a good time where it kind of did pick up the pace and you go, but then now we're going to go on from this. We're obviously, I'm saying this because we're going to take a little bit of a break before we come back with the last four issues of it. But up until this point, I'm on board. It's just, I need something more to get me excited. So we'll see.
Well, everything just seems like, you know, like every transition we make, like to freaking Gone Nine, and even Bleas' home planet, it just seems like we're just doing little things that really have no meaning in the long run for what we're dealing with. Yeah, Blaze is finally going to take her revenge and shit like that, which is building up that character. But this is issue 3, issue 1 and 2, just dealing with over and over the idea of Atrocitus not being the raged out monster that he wants to be. And it just keeps being reiterated over and over again. And now we're about to like leave that behind to deal with the like ongoing paranoia of Atrocitus.
Yep. Yeah. Now it's just paranoia instead of the, you know, if I have the rage. And I'll tell you, as it goes, the reviews got worse and worse. Like people were really starting to get sick of it. But we'll see how it ends up after the break.
I've been making shows of trading blows, just hoping no one knows that I've been going through the motions, walking through the pot. Nothing seems to penetrate.
All right, Eric, we're back to finish up the second half of the Red Lanterns trade. And it starts off where you have Atrocitus, and Atrocitus is very wary of what is going on with Blaze.
Well, that paranoia is going high, like full board at this point.
It really is, and really through the rest of this trade, and even the whole thing, it's really based. There's a couple big stories going on, and one of them is Atrocitus is, you know, he's paranoid. He's paranoid that he's losing grip of the Red Lanterns, especially since he's been having trouble. He couldn't find rage in that first half. He questioned if he was going through the motions, and then he makes Blaze, you know, his lieutenant, I would say, and now he's pissed off because he thinks
she's maybe a little bit too smart.
Yeah, yeah, that's how we left
Red Lanterns
the last
away from
bit.
Her, yeah.
And so he goes to Scalix, and the problem that he has throughout this, and it really ends up being like a double-edged sword for him, is that he wants to have some information from these Red Lanterns. They can't give it to him because they're raged out. You can't have that. So
I really enjoy the first part of this whole, like, you know, the fourth issue of this trade, because it's just Scalix trying to get away from Atrocitus. It's Atrocitus chasing after him, just yelling his name, just so he can bite into him to get the information from the blood, but like memory he wants.
Yeah.
But because they are retarded Red Lanterns, he sees like, Atrocitus.
Yeah, he sees a retarded version,
possible.
Too. Yeah. That's the problem.
He
wants Scalix to give him some good information. So he goes up and he's like, hey, what was Blaze talking about? What were you doing? He's like, Scalix, rage, Scalox. And he's like, God damn it, what have I done? Why did I put myself in this position? So he ends up, we see another bit of the Red Lantern's power when Atrocitus bites into Scalix's neck to be able to kind of do a, you know, a blood magic.
Blood memory,
You know, memory. And he sees, but like you said, all he's going to see is what Scalix saw. All Scalix saw was nonsense.
Retarded
nonsense
from his fucking moronic Red Lanterns.
Yeah. You'll
and then
Blaze.
I'll tell you, the progression of this made me laugh so much.
It's so
funny. You have this whole thing, and then you just have Blaze by the blood ocean, and then there's Atrocitus just dragging Scalix up to it and tossing him in.
Yeah.
And
I think everybody else
because he's done with the nonsense.
It's even hilarious before, because what he sees is he's like, and it's so good, he's like, I see exactly what Scalix saw and heard. It's nothing. It's Blaze goes, Atrocitus, kill, possible, gah. And then Zilius is like, gah, kill, gah. And then you have Ratchet, Atrocitus, we must. And the best is the next panel.
No.
It's Atrocitus with a face palm. Oh, God, what have I done? And he's going with everything he heard. Atrocitus, kill. We must. We must what? And that we must seems to be the thing that he sticks with this whole time. And it keeps going on. And yeah, you have Blaze then. We, Atrocitus, we must, Ion, And then he's like, I can't make out the words. No shit. But this is what cracks me up. So Atrocitus is there. Okay, Blaze has intelligence now. He's given her, or, you know, her intelligence back. But he needs somebody to tell him what she was talking about before. So then he grabs Scalix, throws him into the blood ocean. Then he grabs, and it's funny, he's like, anybody who's around at this point, Atrocitus is just pointing.
All right, everyone's taking a goddamn bath. Get in here.
Oh, yeah, Zilius comes back. You too. And then Ratchet comes back. And you. And he just throws them in. Now, Blaze, through all this, is saying to Atrocitus, listen, It's not a good thing. I mean, you're doing this, you know, and she's playing him. We know she is. And it really does come to roost later. But she actually has a point. You know what? You've now taken what you consider the three best of the other Red Lanterns, the, you know, the raged out Red Lanterns. You've taken three of your best, and you've probably doomed them to die.
That's the worst, though, is because she doesn't say your best. She says our best. And that just works against his paranoia as well.
He gets mad. He gets mad throughout the whole thing. Her wordage is really like are we, and he just gets pissed. But yeah, she says, and it cracks me up too when she says it. It's like, you know what, I am a little above these guys, you know, I'm a little special, I'm Bleeze, and you threw me in there and I almost didn't make it out. You expect these motherfuckers, I expect her to really be centering on Zilius. Exactly. Right. You think that madball motherfucker is going to go in there and come out alive. Now, as this trade goes, we really don't see what Zilius did see.
No.
Because what happened is you get these backstories. And then I tell Peter Milligan right now, I like the way they did this. I like that you're having a backstory under duress. This isn't just a, hey, there's Skellix. I heard that he was a killer and he did that. No, they are seeing these memories and you're seeing the worst of them. We don't have to see anything but what made them Red Lanterns. Yeah. And they go back and forth. And yeah, you do get Ratchets. And Skellix is here. And I'll tell you, Ratchets is better to me because Skellix is just a piece of shit. Not that I thought he was anything up, but you go to Skellix and Ratchet, and we're going to see his backstory where his planet, his name's Ratchet. His people, they do not have any personal connection.
I'm looking at Ratchet's life and talking about how everybody's isolated at a certain point, and like you can only talk to people online. Yeah. I'm like, this sounds amazing.
It sounds amazing, but the funniest thing about this is if you do read this with us, just keep in mind that Ratchet's people, this is their version of To Catch a Predator. This is what made me laugh so much because Ratchet is online, seems to be in a chat room talking with other people of his race and trying to set up a personal meeting, trying to set up a meeting
how
where he can see people face
you?
To face. Yeah, I'm telling you, he's like, I'm going to bring candy and wine. I'll be there in a minute. Because, yeah, he gets there. He's tired of being isolated and never meeting. He's, you know, 137 years old,
something like that.
Yeah, 138. He's 138 years old. He never has had any personal contact with anybody from his race. They're all holograms.
He's exchanged, you know,
like
genetic
that.
Material. They go and do that. They freaking, you know, just take some stuff so they can procreate.
But you
so
just
like,
sit
no
in your pod,
contact
it looks like.
With anybody. Exactly.
Yeah, so
it's amazing.
It's crazy. Then he gets in a Metroid-looking suit. That the visor made me laugh because it looked like Metroid. And he goes
Samus
on.
Samus gotten ugly.
Yeah, really. Real ugly. But yeah, I thought it was funny there too because he's all squished into the suit. And he goes off. He goes off to meet these people. And when he does, the government shows up. The guys come up. It seems to be a setup. I'm telling you, there you have to catch a predator. They show up and
Chris Hansen walks in.
Yeah, Chris Hansen shows up
in
a spacesuit, and he's like, "Why do you have this candy and the wine?" I didn't know. I thought that this was a party or something. But yeah, they end up, and the big thing is they say, "Don't expect clemency." And before we see them, what happens? That's the setup of the whole, you know, how Ratchet became a Red Lantern. You go back to Atrocitus, who is now back talking to his buddy Krona, and he's just sitting there. And there is a lot. We were talking before we got back to the second part. There is a lot of repeating. I can't even say it's recap. It's pretty much recap by way of repeating scenes ad nauseum.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just the same
getting,
old
we're
scene.
Getting the same thing over and over again, using different concepts and ideas to get us there. But like, you know, we have different scenes, but we're just exploring the same concept over and over again.
Like you said, it's not a flashback per se of, you know, hey, earlier this happened. It's just the same thing. I mean, Atrocitus keeps going to Krona and keeps basically talking to him about the same stuff and say, you slaughtered my people. You're my rage. I didn't get to kill you. I'm upset. And it just keeps going on and on. And it's funny in this part, though, Atrocitus kind of, to me, he starts realizing how screwed up his life has become, especially with Bleeze and what she's done. He thinks he's made a mistake. But really, he's like, you know, He and he said, we must get rid of what? He keeps talking, but he's like, you know what? Why am I sitting here talking to a dead corpse? But then, yeah, he sees what he thinks, you know, Bleez is listening in. And he goes off to find out what's going on. But then because of that, he's all raged out and decides he's just going to leave the planet. He's going to leave Izmal and go around the universe.
Let's go find some
wrong people.
Yeah,
let's just go around. I want some rage. This is almost to me like this is like a hobby. He goes off and he goes to different places. He goes to Sector 495, where daughters are blind at puberty. You know, it's just a bunch of nonsense. You really don't even need to know much of that. But then he goes back to Earth, and it continues the whole thing. Like, why is this little planet so filled with rage? And he's like, you know, the government here, they're high on the hog, but the poor people, they aren't. And they don't get what's, you know, they should have. And I don't know why this limo is going through this back area. It's just so ridiculous. But he goes down and kills these people in the limo for no reason. And then there's a guy who is
walking. These people in the limo seem to be like the rich guy who's screwing over the farmer.
I know. You just don't even get the idea of what it is.
He kills the farmer because we have the whole idea that he also, you know, abandoned and was a violent person to his wife who was forced to freaking take care of the family on herself now. So everybody's just dead.
Yeah, and then I was like, okay, I guess child support is out of the question now. He's dead. This first part of this trade, this would have been the fourth issue. Really like, actually. I mean, it has a lot going on. It does slow down after this, but then we go back and we see John and Ray.
We're just jumping through a lot of different things, though, because we start out with the whole thing with the Blood Ocean and, like, you know, making Ratchet, Zilius Zox, and Scal smarter. So then with that, we get their backstories, but then we're jumping around to, you know, Atrocitus with Krona, Atrocitus freaking doing some Rage Hall going on, and then Rancor as well, getting him set up. I'm like, we have a lot of things that we are working at this issue alone.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I'm just saying, I liked
and
it,
the
though.
Transitions are
I liked it because I liked the whole, we're actually getting something. Every page seemed, except Atrocitus talking to Krona, but this is where, you know, this, actually, we did a good job of splitting these up in our two sections here, because this section starts out and then it's balls
like
to the wall.
Comics.
No, it's balls to the wall here. And then just by the end, it really slows down. But yeah, here you get John and Ray. If you remember, Ray tried to kill that guy that killed his grandfather. John kind of stopped them at that point. Well, this is where Eric was joking in that first half, where Ray was like, I don't care what happens to me. But then goes and cries to John, you got to
John, the police are after me. Oh, fuck.
And it continues that
whole
thing.
I'm too pretty to go to prison, John.
Yeah, really. Look at me. I got a pretty mouth. But yeah, John just, he starts, you know, yelling and pretty much making fun of John still about, you know what, you just keep it all inside. You can't do it. And they just start fighting when the police show up. And then this is where you were saying, then you do bounce back and forth a lot in this, because then you go back to the Blood Ocean. Bleez is watching to see who comes out at this moment. You know, Atrocitus
is
off
causing trouble.
And that's
the funniest thing to me, because we're doing all of this stuff, and, like, you know, we don't even get back to the friggin' Red Lanterns coming out of the Blood Ocean until the next issue, I believe. Yeah. And I'm like, Atrocitus, like, hey, go see what's up with that. I'm like, they are dead. They drowned a day ago.
But yeah, then you get Scalix's backstory. And Scalix, he's a piece of shit. He is an assassin. He's a killer. He's done some stuff. You have a thing about these cyber eggs that his boss thinks that Scalix stole, and this is what causes all the problem. I'm assuming he did. He says, probably. I don't know where they are, but never really goes on about that. He's just like, listen, the guy is boss Lancer. He's like, Lancer, I'm your best guy. I did everything for you. Remember me. All the loyal service I gave you. And that's like a repeated thing. That is basically Scalix's issue, is that he says, you know, I gave you all my loyalty and this is what you're going to do. And what they ended up doing is throwing him in a furnace. But yeah, and we said Zilius is in there as well, but you never really get Zilius's backstory.
And I'm sorry, I didn't read the rest going on because we just did this trade. So for the rest of the whole thing, we don't get any backstory on Zilius at all. And he is my favorite of the Red Lanterns.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have Atrocitus, and he's talking about needing allies and how he may have killed, you know, he may have killed the Three Lanterns because he's not sure. And he goes back to talk to Krona again. and Krona's gone. The body is gone. And of course,
his only friend. Bleeds.
Yeah, and this is where you had it, where somebody was in the shadows watching. He went off to get them, but it kind of changed from that into him going out into space. So
it was,
I'm telling you, it's
a weird transition where he was just trying to figure out if that was Bleeze watching him. All right, got to go work off some rage. Time
yeah,
to go
that was
the
problem, because now we see that whoever it was, which we do find out who it was by the end, ended up seeming to steal Krona's body. Now he goes to Bleeze.
You big dummy.
Yeah, he goes to Bleeze and starts screaming at her. And basically, he's like, you know what? And he's beating the shit out of her. Of course, we get a shot of her ass, as we always do.
Oh, we only get shots of her ass.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, when she is sitting at the blood ocean, big old shot of the ass. When friggin' Tristan comes and grabs her by the throat, big old shot of her ass. I'm like, come on.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy. He's just beating the crap out of her, and he's going to kill her. He's trying to kill her, and because he's like, you know what? You did this to me. I'm the one who gave you intelligence. How dare you? And she's like, what? Krona's missing. Like, she has no idea. It's funny because, to me, it almost goes hand in hand with Skalix with those cyber eggs, but it doesn't seem to you know what I mean? It could have had a connection on the way or some sort, like how we always get blamed for things, but it doesn't. She just says. And she's smart, and she's like, you know what? It wasn't me. You know, maybe something
else
happened.
And the thing is, it's not even like she's all that smart. All she says, it wasn't me. And Atreus is like, huh, wasn't her, huh? Maybe Krona is alive.
I'm telling you, though, she's pretty smart. But yeah, you know what? She's a manipulator. She's very big at finding the things to
get
under Atreus' skin to make him stop and think, because he says, you know what? I gave you intelligence. I think you were peeping. And then Krona's gone. And she's like, this is a coincidence. And he's like, I've lived too long to believe that. And that who else would remove this? Who else would? And then she's like, what if nobody took him? Maybe he's alive. And that is that right there is the thing that Atreus has been hoping for the entire time that he's been there with Krona. It just dawns on him, if he's alive, then that means I can kill him. That's all it is. But yeah, that's where Atreus starts trying to, you know, find him. You also see in the shadows where you have the shadowy figure, gotta keep moving, air thin, breathing. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? But yeah, you have Atreus and Bleeze. I mean, it's such a weird thing that's supposed to tie in, like he's dragging the body there or whatever, but they're there still. And that's when Atreus is like, you know what? I've been off planet. I've been raging out. You know, me and you just had that fight, but maybe Krona is alive. What the fuck happened to those three red letters? Did they survive? And they're like, okay, let's go find out. But even then, freaking Atreus is still just beating the shit out of Bleeze at every time, because they're gonna go off. But now Atreus remembers the reason why he wanted them to survive anyway, is to see what the fuck she's up to. And you know, she says, "Are you gonna try to get rid of me?"
And with the memory of the whole idea of the memory that he's like, he's trying to figure this shit out. Just goes back to beating the shit out of
him. That's what I'm saying.
Get them.
He's like, they're your demons? Because, she starts using the your and are and, you know, things. They're your demons. You deal with them. Find the Red Lanterns and then help me search for Krona. And then she says, do you really want me to find your lost creatures? And then he just – or are you trying to get rid of me? Maybe you hope I won't make it back up this time, because he wants her to go back into the Blood Ocean. She doesn't know if she's going to be able to survive that again. And then she just says that. He grabs her by the fucking head and slams her into the ground, like, so violently. And now we get, as the reader, the proof that she's up to something and she is going to do something. She doesn't want to be abused. I mean, she is a Red Lantern, but she has her intelligence back. Why would she want to take this? Dexter comes over to a bloody Bleeze, and she's petting him and like, oh, your beloved master will attack me once too often. And then that's when Dexter.
And I'm telling you, this whole scene with Dexter, I think it's just to remind people that we do have a kitty cat Red Lantern running around, because we have not seen him in issues now.
But it's, you know, I like that, because now we get the idea she's not just going to take this. So, you know, it's proof positive of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then she dives into the Blood Ocean to go get get Ratchet, Skalix, and Xilius. And she says she's kind of relieved when she jumps in. She's like, well, I guess this shit already happened. You can keep jumping in to the Blood Ocean. It doesn't affect you like it did. We go back to Ratchet's backstory again. It's to catch a predator. They're fighting him. They end up putting him in a cell, and basically he's going to survive for however.
They cut off all his tendrils?
Yep, all his tendrils are cut off. He goes on a hunger strike, and this is like something like, you know, after 2 years of my 80-year sentence, the authorities amputate my tendrils. I'm like, okay, it's, you know, this starts the great isolation. Now he's in a cell where he can't feel
anything. Year 14 is a freaking hunger strike?
Yep, he goes on a hunger strike. They're force-feeding him. He ends up, then he gets hallucinations, and when he wants to be alone, now he isn't, because all he sees are those people, you know, hallucinations of them coming in. And then he says, you know what, my companion then became pure hatred for everything, and now he is pissed, and he says, I want to be alone. So the whole thing is wrapped around where he wanted to have contact. He wanted to see what that was like and see what his other, you know, people of his race were like. Now he just wants to be left alone, and he rages out. He rages out at these hallucinations, and then makes pretty much breaks a hole or weakens the wall, and a Red Lantern ring comes in, and as it comes in, he grows a tendril to accept it, which is crazy, right?
And it's weird, too, because the whole idea, you know, like every time we see a Red Lantern being turned into a Red Lantern, they change their appearance a bit, and the whole thing is like Ratchet, from what he looks like before he has his Red Lantern to this big old – he looks like a big old jellyfish is what he looks like. Like, he's changed into this jellyfish. Like, there's no face anymore. I'm like, is that Red Lantern symbol just over his face? Because he does not look anything like he did before. Like, he looks like a big old tentacle monster, big old brain man, but it's just – I want to see the transformation, because all we see is him accepting the ring, but no transformation like we see with Rancor later on.
Yeah. And then you then we go to one of the most confusing parts of the issue and the trade, where you have Atrocitus goes off. He's pissed. He's going to try to find Krona. He's excited. Krona alive, that means he can kill him.
Yeah.
He can kill him with his own hands. And you see him fighting a shadowy figure, and he's fighting him. But is this – you don't really get much of this, and then all of a sudden it just goes to darkness. And I don't know if this is inside his mind. It doesn't seem to be.
He's hit from behind, and the freaking blast of it or whatever has caused a big old dust cloud or something like that. So all you see is the shadowy form of his adversary in this dust cloud, and then – blood
black.
And then it's all black, and I'm like, I don't know what happened, because then we go back to the Red Lanterns coming out of the blood ocean. I'm like, what happened? Because
we don't know what happened at that point. Atrocitus sent Bleeze out to get the three Red Lanterns, and then said, when you're done, we're gonna go find Krona. Now I guess he decided to go on his own, but yet you don't get an idea of where they are or where he is. You don't get an idea of what he's doing. He just goes off thinking to himself about how, if Krona's alive, this will be great. You're led to believe that he's fighting Krona, and
I'm telling you, I've had a problem with the transitions in the series so far, but like this issue, I think is the worst
weirdest,
for it, because we have that. And then we go back to Bleeze getting Ratchet and Zilius Zox out of the Blood Ocean. Hey, there was another one down there. Yeah, I couldn't find him. And then we get back to freaking Skalix in the Blood Ocean, where she finds him and pulls him out. I'm like, after having a little bit more of his backstory, and when we do this, though, Atrocitus is right there like nothing ever fucking happened. I'm like, please tell me what has been going on.
Yeah, and when she does go into the blood pit, like you said, she grabs Zilius and Ratchet, and then says that, oh my god, I couldn't find Skalix, and that's when you do continue the backstory, and it's Skalix being thrown in this furnace. Somehow, pain don't hurt Eric, because he's there. It doesn't kill him. It just burns off his flesh. He even rips it off, and then says, it's not the flames that tear at me. It's the idea I've been betrayed. I'm like, no, it's the flames as well.
You're getting
burned alive. And then he just busts out, gets a ring, and, you know, takes, you know, revenge on those. And this is where
I'm telling you, it's cool to see the ring coming to him. But from what we saw, that he was getting pushed into the furnace before, we could get the idea of how he got that freaking skull face, you know?
Yeah.
So this little bit that we have from him, the idea of being betrayed, didn't really do much more for the story. And it's just
to get his look.
Because, like I said, we had, like, in Bleeze, she says, like, you know, oh, I got you Ratchet, I got you Zilius. Yeah. Oh, there was another. I couldn't find him. So, you know, we just had this little bit where she has to go back in, and all of a sudden,
it's just
I found
a delay.
Him.
It's just a delay to get more of his backstory.
Which he didn't need, I don't think.
No, it's weird. You could have had the backstory, and then she could have went into Godot 3. It's just like a shifting of the things. It was odd. And really, like you said, the backstory to me is one of two things. It's that you have his look. That's mm-hmm. pretty much most of it. But the other part is to kind of say, so we had seen his backstory that he is a piece of shit. And yep. that's what disturbs Ratchet, because they're like, you know what? What did you do? He's like, yeah, I was a killer. I was the best. I was the best in the business. I tortured. I killed. Best. Yeah. And there's Ratchet, who he became a Red Lantern and really was destroyed by his people only because he wanted personal contact. And he's like, huh. And it's so funny that he is like the thinker. And he's like, huh.
Oh, yeah.
So this means it's almost like there is a bad side to the afterlife.
You know, it's talking not all about based heaven on and morality. Hell.
Yeah. He's like, basically, you know what? These red rings, I thought that we were going to be on this mission of morality.
Of
I
justice.
Thought that because of what yeah. he, because of what happened to him and how he had revenge, that seemed like it was justified. It was justice for him. Pretty much, Skallix just got it because he was being killed because he was a piece of
crap. He hung out with fucking pieces of shit. He was a yes. killer, and it fucking caught
yeah.
up with
and
him.
And I think
at the
that
end.
That is where Peter Milligan is going to tell us that, yeah, we already had in the beginning the gray area of who really demands justice when you had that planet going in a civil war, and, you know, Atrocitus shows up and goes to kill the guy, and he's like, but I have a wife and a daughter. Who's going to be their justice? Who's going to get justice for them when you kill me? And it really threw Atrocitus for a loop.
Yeah.
This is where it's kind of solved here for the rest of the deal for the Red Lanterns. It doesn't matter morals. It doesn't matter who. It's who is more mad. Pretty much. Whoever has the most rage about what's going on, that's what happens. And I said to you before we started, it's kind of like this would explain that. I get very mad, Eric.
I don't know
if you know that. But if I'm in line at Walmart and a lady is taking so long because the one teller at our Walmart has to talk about every goddamn item you get. So you get spaghetti. She's like, huh? Spaghetti?
Ooh.
What is that? That sounds foreign.
What
and then you'll delicacy
have that, is this, sir?
Yes, and then you'll have a spaghetti sauce. What world do we live in that they have spaghetti sauce with mushrooms already in it?
Ragu?
And I get so mad, and I think that this just spells out, if I get mad enough, that Azilius or one of the Red Lanterns, they're going to come down and kill her. It doesn't matter if I'm right. It doesn't matter. It just goes by pure rage. And I think it does lead into the next scene, because pretty much we go back to Rancor on Earth. And it also looks like already the ring is heading its way. That is the ring heading, which is weird to me, because at this point, who do you think it would be heading for? Because he's not that rich.
Right now,
would it
seems
brother?
Like it's a Ray Wraith situation.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It might have been his brother, because he's the guy.
Well, I don't know. He's raging out, but you know, I'm telling you, he's keeping it in. Yeah, I'm saying what we get from John here is, you know, he has been angry his
yes.
entire life for everything that's been happened to him, but he keeps it inside and just building and building. So I think that building of the rage is what is calling the ring forward.
Already to be heading here at that point right before, because this is where it goes full out. But I also think that they Peter Milligan does a good job that he is almost like – I don't know. Is he the perfect Red Lantern Rancor because his rage is based on his own rage at himself as well? I mean, he can't really – ever get past this rage. The rage that he has in him is so deep and about so many other things that it's not just Atrocitus. Like you said, Atrocitus is worried. Chrono dead. What does he have then? You know, what does he have when he couldn't kill him? John, who ends up being Rancor, he's mad at himself for not being mad. I mean, it's crazy. But yeah, so I'll go with it. But yeah, at this point, his brother's getting the shit kicked out of him by the
police. That's the worst. The police are actually leading him out of the house. He's going to be arrested for trying to set Baxter's house on fire and shit like that. And he freaking, you know, as he's trying to get away, like the cops are dragging him out.
He
freaking accidentally elbows a cop in the nose. And then they just fucking push him down and just beat him to death.
Yeah,
and I'm like, Jesus Christ. And the one part, too, is like where John walks out and just goes to his brother's dead body. It just seems like the police disappeared. That's what I thought. And they fucking disappeared. I'm like, they are there, but it's just such a weird thing because
it
like,
is. It's so weird.
There's no cops around. They're just letting him up to the body. I'm like,
even then, they got to get that body out of there. They have killed a man, and really it's going to be their word against John's at this point. So I would say it might be better served to kill him as well, because he seems to be the only witness at this point. It's crazy, though, because he's there, and I'm like, those police just left. They got the hell out. But yeah, he ended up watching his brother you know, get killed by the police. And he considers himself a coward. He considers himself all this stuff. And he gets the ring and he rages out. So we finally have Rancor. The problem is as you're going through this, you're going to play back and forth with the idea of him being a Red Lantern. Now, he is a little more intelligent than the standard Red Lantern. But because I haven't seen a Red Lantern actually become a Red Lantern, except where we saw these backstories,
right.
I don't know how it works. I don't know if you lose your intelligence gradually, but he seems to hold on to it a little more. And
it's
maybe
one of those things where it seems like he has it like internal, like he can understand.
No, I know,
things,
but he even like talks to Guy, because that's the big cliffhanger coming up in the next issue, is that Guy Gardner shows up and he does talk to him. And Guy's like, huh, I've never heard one of you Reds talk. But the other thing that gets me is, you have turned John into Rancor, into a Red Lantern, but yet you want to have dialogue and stuff like that. So at one point, he even, I don't understand the words that are coming out of his mouth. We're like Rush Hour, but then he does. And then he says, like, he said Red Lantern and stuff. I'm like, okay. Because I think that he couldn't wrap it around to actually have a character that you're going to base issues on now without before he hits the blood pool and all that or whatnot. But yeah, he's there. He's raged out. The police are there. Oh my God, we better call an ambulance. I'm like, you're a little too late, police. That guy's dead. And like,
I would just
the
say, oh my God, that guy turned into a monster.
Yeah, look
Let's
at him. And they're like, oh my God,
he killed him.
The one guy, we need the fire brigade. Look out. Look at him. And then we get a little bit of, you know, some quick things of backstory with him being picked on after his mom died. About, oh, look at the bookworm. I like it too. It's like, why can't you be normal? He's just reading
like
a book
Ray
on
Ray.
A bench. Yeah, like Ray Ray, your brother was dead. But yeah, he's pissed. He wants revenge, and he's just angry. He ends up fucking just burning the shit out of a
he
guy.
He just ends up
his,
coughing up some of that blood on a freaking police officer, burning him alive.
And then you get one of the funniest things of this whole trade is when he's thinking to himself about all this, and he says, Acrid, scorching the roof of my mouth, the taste of burnt peanut butter. He says that twice. Twice he mentions burnt peanut butter. Maybe that's something that Peter Milligan hates. Why would he say that?
I don't think I've ever, smelled or even tasted burnt peanut butter.
I don't really cook much peanut butter.
No.
I put it on bread. And put a little jelly with that burnt peanut butter. But yeah, you go back and see that he was bullied. And this is what I was saying. Like, there's nothing that's going to stop him from being a rage-filled monster at any point. He has so many things to be upset about, including his own not taking revenge on people before because he didn't want to be upset. The police start firing at him. The bullets, we've seen this before, the bullets aren't going to hurt him.
No.
And he just takes off. He just flies out, you know, and he doesn't know what he's become. He's upset. Then when you go back to Ismalt, and that's where Atrocitus is suddenly fighting Bleez again.
Beating the shit out of Bleez.
Yeah, and it's more of this continuation, you know, hey, proud Bleez of Havania, you lost your wings, you lost your very mind, you once served with inarticulate rage, but I, Atrocitus, took pity on you. We've seen this
I know,
every
man.
Issue.
Damn.
Yeah, and the, how do you betray me with disobedience? And then he looks and you have all the other, you know, Red Lanterns just standing there. You do have Skollox and Xilius and, Ratchet in the front, and he's like, hey, Skollox, take those other, search for Krona, you know, and by the blood ocean. I know that devil, he'll already be there, and Bleez comes from behind and attacks him. And this is a big thing for the rest of this trade, is the idea that Atrocitus is not as strong as he should be. The Krona disappearing is really fucked him up. And, you know,
beginning, not even the Krona disappearing, but the fact that he can't really grab a hold of the rage the way he wants.
But this seems worse. They even say, like, oh, his strength is going down even more. But the thing is, I would think that his rage at Krona disappearing would have been, you know, freaking to 11. Because he is mad, but it doesn't seem like that.
And not only that, like the idea of like Krona disappearing, but the idea as well that he could be alive and he can take his rage out on Krona should have, you know, upped his goddamn game.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it should be. This should be Atrocitus is back in town, baby, and ready to, you know, party. But instead, he looks back. I mean, he's used to just beating the shit out of anybody that he wants to. I mean, he just goes, what he says is what you do. He just beats the crap out of him. When he turns around, you see all the Red Lanterns are all standing there, including, like I said, the three that now have thought, but yeah. even the others who are
the
still
rest of the
just
goddamn moronic
out,
ones.
They are all there looking like they're ready to attack him, and this fucks him up. And he's like, and then he starts yelling at them, and then he says, like, what am I doing explaining myself? The fact that I am Atrocitus was once enough, but exactly. she's infected him. She's infected me. Something has changed. He just tosses her aside. But yeah, he's completely pissed. We go back to Earth, and Rancor now is going to go and
he's going off
digger.
Of his true rage right now, and yeah, freaking yeah. he realizes that the reason all this is going down is because Baxter killed his grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is what he's going to have to deal with now. He has to get the justice grandfather that, you know, Ray tried to get, and hopefully this will quell his freaking rage.
Yep, and you do get a thing that is pretty good. Because we were worried that you weren't going to get it earlier in the trade, where Ray did come to him. We don't know how he found out that it was Baxter, but you do see a flashback of him saying, "Listen, I know who killed our grandfather. It was Baxter." And remember yeah. when that happened, we were like, "How the fuck he just shows
Seriously.
Up, Baxter?" But yeah, that's where you get it. And then he's like, "It's Baxter. The whole thing is my mom died. My grandfather was taking care of us. He's the only one who seemed to love us. And then this Baxter killed him. If Baxter didn't kill my grandfather, Ray would still everybody would still be alive." But then
is
you
it
go,
weird to you that the police seem to
oh,
have
yeah.
Ray in freaking police
custody? I was just
going to
say this is the worst thing because. Baxter, I don't care what's going on. The only, you know, you do have this almost appears to be a either they know somehow that Rancor knows him and
See,
he's going
to
come
make
because
any sense to me for
and
what
the,
we
the
have.
Other no, it doesn't make any sense because if you just read this, it almost gets to the point where you think that he's going to witness relocation.
Exactly, he's in witness
and
protection.
And the only way you'd have that. Is if there was going to be a trial, and the trial would have been from Ray, who is dead. You don't need Baxter. Why do they care about Baxter? There's
well, even
no
the
connection
idea
of
that,
anything
you know,
now.
Like, I don't know why they would think that, you know, John turning into a fucking Red Lantern, which they know nothing about,
no.
would lead to them. All right, look. His
He's
going to
come
after,
after you
Baxter.
Because, yeah,
we have to,
how
yeah,
do they
exactly.
know?
We
yeah.
have to protect him now. I'm like, what?
Yeah, they're really going on the fact that they seem to know that John, who's Rancor, will come for revenge because he's a Red Lantern. Doesn't make any sense. Makes no.
no
sense at all. And for the most part, I would believe that the police probably know that he was guilty of that. They said they couldn't pin any evidence on him. Why help that piece of shit? Just
seriously.
Yeah, and you have it. It's the worst when Rancor's going and he and I'll just keep calling him Rancor. He doesn't have the name Rancor
yet.
It is John, but I just that is his Red Lantern name eventually. But he grabs his grandfather's fucking gravestone and he heads it off. I'm like, oh, he's going to hit him over the head with the
gravestone. I'm
telling
you, though, I was really
bloody.
Think there was a missed opportunity because I was actually waiting for a scene where, you know, the police are driving in a van with Baxter in the back
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Rancor is going after him. And I really thought he was going to shove that freaking tombstone down so, like, the freaking Moore thing was right in front of Baxter before he tore him out
yeah,
of the van.
Yeah, so
or
that he can
like that.
Say, read this, like something then, like
just,
that.
Just for, like, the symbolism of it or something
yeah.
like that. I just thought it would be a really cool scene, but we never get that. And instead, it's just, all right, pull him out of the van and then bash him over the
Yeah.
with my grandfather's
and again,
tombstone.
You also go with this whole thing here is that he is raged out. We do get his comprehensible narration, what's going
yes.
on in his head. He's very confused. He's doing this stuff. He seems to be driven by this rage, but at this point, he's
and
pretty much in control of what he's
butter.
Doing. Yeah, he can taste scorched peanut butter, and then he says it again. But I like the fact that he goes up to Baxter, and basically he's like, you know what? You killed my grandfather. You do this. That's not what he says, because he
no.
can't talk like that. He's like, kill. And yeah, the worst is that they're Baxter. Jack Moore.
I'm
the
like,
hell
there's
he?
No actually, way you recognize this guy.
Yeah, how? And he's like, Jesus, what happened to you? And you know what happened to me? You killed my grandfather, you fucking asshole.
And
he's like,
I
listen.
Love the pleading here of this guy. Look,
yeah.
look, I'm sorry, man. I didn't want to kill the old boy. You don't
yeah.
know what it was like for me. You know, like rubbish parents, no hope
yep,
of a job.
No hope.
It ain't
my it's
fault.
Not my fault.
I'm
the
way
I am,
you know?
Yeah, and that goes back to even the part that we had with Skalix and about what is revenge and is it, you know, it doesn't matter. You get your revenge, and he goes to do it, and unfortunately, Guy Gardner shows up, and Baxter is protected by a Green Lantern bubble, and he doesn't go, though I don't know. It looks like maybe the tombstone would have crashed into pieces, but you don't really get much of that. Yeah. And you have John looking like, there's Guy Gardner. I'm Guy Gardner. You and I have some talking to do. And I'll tell you, at this point, I liked the stuff with John Rancor. I did, but Guy showing up was like, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Now this is cool. Like, this is really cool to have him show up. But yeah, you go to the net, what would be the final issue of this trade, and you start out in Sector 666, and it looks like some Sinestro Corps members
survivors of the Sinestro Corps, because as we talked about in the Green Lantern book, Sinestro went back and was just eradicating the Sinestro Corps for going against this freaking thing.
And this actually, like with all the things in Rebirth that we talk about oh my god, this continuity, whatever, this fits really well because even at the point when they're like, oh, that's Sinestro, he then betrayed us, he's a Green Lantern now, and it's really good. But yeah, you see that Bleach shows up with the Red Lanterns now. No Atrocitus here.
Nope.
And basically says that her, you know, the age of Bleach has begun. She says the age of Atrocitus is over. The age of Bleach has begun. And you can only be confused at what happened. Because the last time we saw it was just Atrocitus there, pissed off at them, smashed.
I'm telling you, these transitions are weird.
Yeah, it is. And this is a weird one from one issue to the next. Now, you could go in your head, okay, Bleach did say that if he attacked her one more time, you know, Dexter was told, and she did, but, and you did have the gathering of the Red Lanterns going. So I'm expecting after this to go back to Atrocitus, who's just bloodied up and trying to regain his way. You don't get that then. It's very quick, though, because now we go back to Earth, and you do have Guy and John fighting. You have them fighting, and you have the Red Lantern John just screaming, spitting his blood, just a lot of stuff with Guy saying, like, listen, and it's weird because it's a Red Lantern's book, you can't have Guy just go to town.
No.
He's there in a kind of pleading, and he has like compassion.
Trying to tell him, look, you can come back from this. There's a Blue Lantern out there. They have Satan Walker. He can make you whole again, buddy.
Yep. Yeah, he's like, I went through this, and he'll be through it again by the end of the New 52. But it's weird because is this something that he just, you know, he was around and he just showed up? Because how does he know that John just turned into a Red Lantern? He seems to know this. He seems
I'm
to know
you,
what's
if,
going on.
If you
on.
Want to go through the thing, like, you know, I'll go with the Green Lanterns book that we have now in Rebirth, where, you know, there's an alien threat or even another
Spectre
detective.
Yes, but he's not the Lantern that's of Earth. This
well,
is
right now he is because he's in the Justice League International as
well.
Yeah,
but it also should be Sinestro. Sinestro is on Earth. I'm wondering where he is. It's just, he shows up. But to have him just show up without the JLI is odd as well. It just seemed weird, but it's the connection.
I'm trying to think of the timeline.
It's
now,
just
we
the
do
connection.
Have him on the JLI, but we also have Guy Gardner and the Green Lantern Corath book at this point, too.
Yeah, that's that. And it's funny, you said JLI. I was thinking of the Green Lantern Corps book. But yeah, you also have, like I said, Sinestro is the Green Lantern of Earth, and I wonder why they didn't kind of use him and Hal to show up, because you did mention Sinestro already in this issue. So it would have been a cool connection of them saying, yeah, you know what, that's Sinestro. He ended up, you know, betraying us anyway, and he's a Green Lantern. And then you go to Earth with John, and then all of a sudden Sinestro shows up with Hal in tow with his other ring, but they don't go. They go with basically, hey, let's get Guy there because he was a Red Lantern at one point, and also he has rage, and he's like, you know, I get it. I'm a dick. All the, you know, everybody thinks I'm an
asshole. See, I'm trying to think. Is Sinestro actually the Green Lantern on Earth, though, because he is not from the sector?
I don't know. But I know he isn't, but he's on Earth. He at that
oh, he
point,
came
but
to
then
get
he goes
Hal Jordan.
Off. I don't know. Actually, at this point, I don't know that there is a Green Lantern of Earth unless you consider Guy that because
well, Guy
of
is.
JLI.
Yeah, John, Guy, and Kyle are all Green Lanterns of Earth.
No,
right
I know
now.
They are, but they seem to all be off doing other things. So, but it's
you
fine.
You still got to protect your
sector. Where's
sector.
John? Where's Kyle? But yeah, but you have this where all it is, it doesn't matter. It's not because he's the Green Lantern of Earth. He doesn't even show
because
up.
Because he was a Red Lantern.
Yeah, it doesn't even spell out that. Like, hey, buddy, I'm the Green Lantern of Earth. It's all the rage and all the stuff about it. Yeah, it's a weird deal with all the Green Lanterns involved at the beginning of the New 52, all these people doing all that other things. I was just – you're right, though. Sinestro doesn't make sense, but he was on Earth for a bit, but yeah.
Yeah,
we'll see.
But he was just getting Hal to go off
yeah,
and
he was getting Hal to do
stuff.
Stuff. stuff. Yeah. And obviously this is after that, because it's kind of what we saw and whatnot, because these guys at the beginning, to me, is when Sinestro went back and took care of all of them.
Yeah.
So the timeline is a little wonky, I guess, in my mind. But yeah, you go and they're just fighting, and it's really just Guy
and this whole thing with
John
the fight where, you
back
know,
and forth.
Where, you know, Rancor goes and saves Guy from getting hit by a car team. Like, I'm looking at the freaking panel. It's a big old spread page of panels. And I'm like, I don't understand what you're trying to convey here, because it doesn't make sense to me. It's just not very – it's not laid out very well.
Yeah, and John saves – he saves Guy. And then Guy's like, oh, my God, you saved my butt, you know. And expects him to start helping with the cleanup
survivors,
fucking, you know, survivors of this fight. He just takes off into space. And Guy's like, hey, where are you going, Red Boy? It's like, that's not a good nickname there. But he goes up, and that's
up, Red Boy.
That's where you have Johnny's like, this is weird. I'm in outer space.
You couldn't call him Red Man. Somebody already has that name.
Red Boy. Yeah, yeah. And he's like, I'm heading off to outer space. He's like, you know what? I remember enough that, you know, I shouldn't be able to survive this. And he doesn't know if he's human anymore. He says, I don't know if I'm human. But then we go back to Bleez and the Red Lanterns going with the Sinestro Corps, the former Sinestro Corps guys. They're just torturing them. And it's weird, too, because it's like, what are they – it's one of those, like Han Solo being tortured in Empire Strikes Back. I really don't know what they're trying to get at.
They didn't even ask me any questions.
No, that's what it's like. It's like they're just torturing them for fun. And this is, to me – Atrocitus is a bad dude, right? He likes to hit people, and he's a very abusive lover, Eric.
Are you telling me that violence only begets more violence?
Well, no, I think that they're showing you that Bleez is worse. Bleez is just having fun. Bleez likes to torture. She's basically, and you know, you expect Skallix to be like, this is my type of lady. Like, they're really just going to town here.
Well, it seems that it's like, it's weird, because these are no longer Sinestro Corps members. These are just like the aftermath, the survivors of it.
She's
who
just
plan
mad.
On getting revenge. And since the freaking Yellow Lanterns are the, like, a Yellow Lantern.
The ones
tortured her and so, like, cut her wings off, like, I'm going to take my rage out on everybody
and
associated.
She's gonna, and the weird thing is, if you remember, we already saw that the Yellow Lantern was set up. So it wasn't even really the Yellow Lanterns that were, but she doesn't care. You were a former Yellow Lantern. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to torture you. And she is just violent.
Butt.
Yeah, she's just violent. They're not, it's funny. They're just not asking anything. She's just going to kill him. And then we go back to Atrocitus. And this is where you said, what happened? He's just walking through. He's in the jungle now. He's just walking. He's on a walkabout. But yeah,
what's the place he calls it? What the hell was it? Do you remember?
Yes, he says it. It's like the abysmal zone.
The abominable zone.
But as he's going, he's looking for Krona.
Krona.
And the weird part is we were led to believe he was fighting somebody at one point from the shadows. Obviously, that wasn't Krona. And then also, the last we saw him, Bleez was there. All the Red Lanterns were looking, you know, cross-eyed at him, ready to kill him. And now Bleez is off.
Was there a seed missing? It was like, all right, fuck you.
Seems
I'm go
like
look
there
for
was. Because, at one point, when all they needed was Atrocitus to be there when he was beating the shit out of Bleez. And then he turned around and, like, what are you guys doing? I'm Atrocitus. I made you. Why am I have to explain myself to these fucking retards? All you needed him to do at that point was one line to say, fuck you guys. I've had enough of you fucking
assholes.
Fuck you
guys. Assholes. I'm going home.
Yeah, I'm going to look for Krona. Just fucking stay out of my way. And then I'd be fine. I'd be like, okay. Yeah, I get it.
Like
and that's
saying,
when Bleez would.
It's a book of weird transitions. Yes. And even though I keep saying that, there's a lot to enjoy in this.
Yeah, I still enjoy it. We're talking about it. Usually by now, we would have been like, and then they have this, and this is bullshit, and whatever. It's not real bullshit here. Well, I like it. It actually, the first half was a little bit slower as we're going on. This half, I actually do like you said, because of the way I liked it, I think it tore you a little out of it because of these jumping back and forth. And I'll admit, when we talk about books at any point on any of our podcasts, it makes it so hard when it jumps back and forth. Like, you kind of in your mind want to continue one line of the story and then come back. But we usually do it as the, you know, chronologically as it goes. But yeah, Atrocitus is walking there. And he goes to the Abominable Zone. He says that he made this area out of the bones.
And we heard about this a bit, and I think in the first issue when he's talking about all the, like, you
all
know,
the mistakes
he made before he ended up making the Red Lanterns as they are now. And, like, you know, he ended up burying the bones over here because
he buried the bones
countless over generations. iterations of like these failed experiments.
Oh, yeah. The crazy thing about this is that I never would have expected it to be a place with buildings. No. You look like, and he kind of says that he made them. So, you know, he says I was marooned. He used the bones of marooned space travelers. There is a lot of space travelers here, and he is a very good bone carpenter. Because these are like, now they're falling
apart. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre over here.
Yeah, they're falling apart. Now, I want to ask you, and I know it's just there for visual effect, but why would he build buildings this big if it's just him? I mean, he's building skyscrapers.
He had a lot of time to kill there by himself.
Yes. He's like, look at that building. It's pretty. Then he fucking knocks it down, at least disrepair. But he goes, and this is where we find out who it was who was in the shadows, possibly fighting him earlier, which is crazy. I don't know how he wouldn't have known this. And also, who took Krona? It is one of his first experiments. Maybe even a son, Eric, if you'd go by that, but it's Abysmus. And he's like, Abysmus? I buried you centuries ago. And Abysmus is just, he is disgusting.
Didn't bury me, Father. You rejected me.
Yeah, you rejected me.
I dug up more of your discarded ones and used the remnants of the blood magic to breathe life into them. Come, brothers. Meet the Abysmorphs.
The Abysmorphs. Now, and also I'm thinking like, what blood magic did you have left? Yeah. After all this time, it's a very forced thing here. Because if that's the case,
it becomes freaking Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, it does. And it's really centering on that. You rejected me, Father. Daddy. But yeah, they just start fighting. And that's where Atrocitus sees. And I don't think it played out well in the art.
My daddy issues, I went about it all wrong. To get my father's attention,
blood
I should
magic.
Have gone to his best friend and wore his skin.
Yeah, wore his skin. And then made Abysmorphs. Ericamorphs.
That's the Ericamorphs.
I think that the art was a little off here because that's when Krona's like, how dare you? You're wearing Krona's skin. Is he? He's falling apart so
I'm
bad.
Done.
Yes, you
I'm
do see a
say,
little
I
blue.
I have no idea if
no,
there's any
you have
Krona's
no
skin
idea. No idea whatsoever, but, you know, you're
like,
told.
Those look like tattered clothing. I can't see that's his skin. I can
I'm
see
telling
that's,
you.
Like,
it
the
looks
shroud
like,
he was wrapped in.
It looks like he was at the gym and he hulked out a little too much and his tank top ripped.
Oh, Jim, when you're really working out, you start buying small
it's
shirts.
True.
That's what you have to
actually,
do.
Actually, what he did a Hulk Hogan. He ripped the shirt off and then went to town. But yeah, he's wearing Krona's skin.
I'm a maniac.
Yeah, and then Bismus says, yeah, I didn't just do that. I kind of ate him, and now I have his powers. Like, okay.
And now it's time for Abysmomania.
If that's how it works, why didn't Atrocitus eat him earlier and then have the final revenge of getting his power set and stuff like that? And then, now it's Battle Royale, Eric. It's to town you go, and the Abysmorphs just attack. He is ripping them in half. Oh, yeah, the Abysmorphs. He's ripping them in half. They're fighting, and that's where John Rancor shows up. He comes flying out like a goddamn fucking meteor and hits, and it distracts Atrocitus because he's like, he sees this guy hit, this new Red Lantern, and he's like,
who are you?
What are you doing on the planet of Atrocitus? And then that's where you
have
John's
like,
monsters.
He's obviously a Red Lantern. What is that so confusing here?
There's no confusion here. You shouldn't have anything that you stop to ask. You know, if you're going to do anything, he would say, hey, I'm Atrocitus. I'm your leader. Go to town.
Help me out
here. Start fighting. Because as he's wondering what's going on with John, Abysmus picks up a goddamn, I don't even know what it is, a big spike.
A leg tight or something.
Yeah, it seemed, I don't know, but he's like, Atrocitus, Father, I'm rejected no longer, and runs him through with it. It stabs him right through, the middle of him. This shouldn't kill him, Eric. It really shouldn't, but you're supposed to believe that it did, because then
you know
like,
it didn't.
He's like, Atrocitus is dead, now kill the Red Lantern. And I wish these Abysmorphs are like, oh, I'm confused. Like, Atrocitus is dead, but he's also a Red Lantern. Are we supposed to keep killing this dead guy? Because these things are just abominations. But yeah, they're going to go after John. And then that's him thinking, you know, the Red Lanterns, that's what the one with the green ring was trying to tell me. And that's where I kind of thought that was a little off, because this guy was talking. You had John like, I don't understand a word he's saying. I don't know. I can't understand the words coming out of his mouth. And now he's like, Red Lantern, that's what that guy was trying to tell me. I'm a Red Lantern. And being a Red Lantern means you're dead? And then he's about to get attacked. But that's it. That's the end
and
of the
trade. And I'm telling you, thinking about it, I know you need to you want to have that resolution about Krona missing, but for some reason, just for where we end up here, it seems like maybe this should have been a 6-issue trade instead of a 7 issue.
Yeah, because I know, like I'm telling you,
the only reason in my mind it became the 7 is to get this Abysmus thing to find out that Krona is not actually alive.
And full out John Rancor. And I know he already was that. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it is weird because, all this was Rancor. Guy. And actually, I think that you're right. I think that if it was 6 issues, it ended with Guy showing up to talk to John. And it would have been a cool cliffhanger to, like,
because even with the rest of the Red
going.
Lanterns, they're just off now, just doing their own thing, going after like former Sinestro Corps members. It doesn't really match up with what we had going on.
My guess is that the next trade is a 5 issue, and they needed to even it out. Well, here's the thing: I know it is. Because if you remember, most of them would be. Most of them are only going to go to that 12 because the next issue is the zero issue. So I bet you that's the thing, that they had to kind of mix and match this to get a 7 issue, then a 5. So we'll see. Though they could have 6 and 6. Yeah. I don't know why, but yeah, I think that's what it probably – somehow they decided that.
Like, you know, I'm saying, besides for the whole atrocities continue for the hunt of Krona, everything just feels different about this last issue.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It seems like it's the start of something new, and but I don't know. I'm glad we read it. This is one of those where we hadn't read the beginning of the New 52 Red Lanterns, and I liked it enough. I thought that it was it did what it had to do. First off, I got backstories of a couple of the Red Lanterns, though they kind of got thrown in willy nilly. I wanted to see Zilius Zox thing because if you weren't around. In the New 52, eventually Charles Soule comes onto this book and turns Zilius Zox into a goddamn star.
He's like, my favorite character
in
the book.
And he is. Yeah. He becomes the best character at the point of the New 52, probably the best character in the New 52 at that little bit of time, where all of a sudden people who had no idea what Red Lanterns were about or even cared about it suddenly cared about it and flocked to the book, it seems.
Guy Gardner and Zilius Zox being best friends and Scalix as well. It was just a fun time to
because
read Red
Lanterns. Guy Gardner, I mean, there's a lot of things that are going to happen later on. Supergirl becomes a Red Lantern. Guy Gardner becomes a Red Lantern. There's a lot of shit going on that gets pretty interesting, but right now I'm glad we read it. I liked it enough. It's not my favorite trade we've done so far, but I was not mad about it, and I think that if you have even a side interest in Red Lanterns or what, I say go get the trade. I would recommend this trade to anybody who wants to, you know, just read and learn a little about what the Red Lanterns are.
Any kind of Lantern fan,
Yeah, and it's a shame that we did have the Red Lanterns in the beginning of Rebirth in the Green Lanterns book, and then they just disappeared. So it's not like people are like, oh, man, I got to know more about them because of Rebirth. It would just be something that you want to go back and read. But what would you give it as a whole as a trader?
Well, as a whole of a trade, I think the art was strong the entire way through. It's just the transitions were off to me, and I think we could have gotten rid of some of the freaking repeating concepts to actually get more of a story. Like, we could have gotten rid of a lot of freaking, you know, Atrocitus remembering his freaking rage and stuff like that and dealing with Krona.
There could have been a whole issue worth of just that taken out.
If we cut that out, we could have added more story to it. We could have got the background of Zilius Zox already thrown out there. Plus, you know, we could have had Rancor in here earlier. I know you wanted to build that up because he's going to be like the human Red Lantern element that we're going to follow along with going forward. But with all this said, I would still give it a 6.5 out of 10. I had a good time reading it. I just think there were a few like missteps here and there.
Yeah, and it's funny because when we went back to this, we really thought that this first trade was going to be the Rancor trade. We thought that this was going to be what you grabbed on, like, hey, people, hey, these Red Lanterns, I don't know, I don't have a connection, whatever. Hey, by the way, there's an Earth Red Lantern, the first Earth Red Lantern. Oh, my God, I'll go on. And it ends up being pretty much at the end of this is when he's really, I mean, he just got the Ismalt. So you're going to have that. The funny thing, though, thinking about that, it's so funny because through the whole trade, Atrocitus probably 10 times has pointed out that Earth is so full of rage. Why wasn't there a Red Lantern from Earth before? The way he's spelling it out, it's always been the worst plan.
We had Mara a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
there have been little instances and shit like that, but nothing like Rancor
becomes.
Yeah. And who knows? And that's the other thing when you're talking about this. This goes hand in hand with talking about any of the Bat Family books as well, because you never do know what exactly they consider still in continuity or whatnot, because they played back and forth. We continue to do it in Rebirth. But, yeah, I did like when Guy showed up. So, but, yeah, I'd give it a 6.8. I thought the art was really good. I agree with you. The transitions are off. There was that one, the weird one of Atrocitus just out of nowhere going to, you know, go to find Krona.
Like, and even we had the one no that really, for some reason, off. Throws me off is just freaking Blee's coming up with Zilius and freaking Ratchet. And like, hey, where's the other one? Couldn't find him. Yeah. And then we go back in and, like, she pulls him out. I'm like, that was an odd way to freaking spell that out.
Here's the thing is, there's weird deals with Blee's. Like, Blee's is kind of hanging out. You have to keep having her show up because of how big she is in this book. But that whole thing with those, you know, the Yellow Lanterns, the former Yellow Lanterns, you didn't need that. There was nothing going on there at all. It was just because you had to have her doing something so that she's off planet. If she's on Ismalt, then shit is going to go wonky. So to have her off planet, but you have her showing up in their spaceship saying that the Atrocitus is done, this is the age of Blee's, it doesn't even jive with what we get in the rest of that issue, let alone going forward. It's just crazy. But yeah, I'd give it a 6.8, and that's not a negative score for me. I was actually very shocked that I liked it as much as I did. I thought that it was going to be boring, especially how it started. It was very slow starting. But by the end, I'm like, okay, I'll be looking forward to in 3 years when we actually get to volume two.
Volume two, yeah.
Eric, 3 years from now it'll take us. But thanks for listening. I'll tell you the next trade that we're doing, Eric, you have no idea.
I don't.
Because we were trying to figure out what it was this week, because I ended up, you know, grabbing a bunch of things and getting this ready. And I looked, and I do believe it's going to be something that people will really, really enjoy, because it's Batwoman Volume 1.
Oh, nice.
Hydrology. And that was one of the big, the big stories going in the
big
beginning
stars of
Rebirth.
Big stars of the
52
back
yeah,
in the
that
day.
Batwoman actually had her own deal. And I have read the first issue. That's something Jess really liked. Your girlfriend Jess really liked it.
Yeah, I have every issue of the initial creative run of that.
Yep, I read and reviewed the first issue for the site. It was one of those ones when we went back and reviewed things that we weren't around, but the site wasn't around then. So I did go back. I believe I gave the first issue a 9. That's how much I liked it. I really did like it. But I do want to mention that we have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/weirdscience. And the reason I bring that up is, as you listen to this, you would be able to go on Patreon, and we have an early access to our new 52 review podcast. So when you're listening to this and hear my voice, you can be well assured that Batwoman issue is already, or the trade podcast is already on Patreon. So if you want to hear that early and you want to get all our other shows, we have a lot of shows, comic book based, some, you know, pop culture based. We have a lot of shit going on, you know, pop on over there and you can check out the levels. You can subscribe and you can listen to the new 52 ahead of time. And that's about it.
And just a whole bunch of stuff in general.
Yeah, we have a ton of stuff. We try to make it, you know, we're trying to expand it so that it's just not comic book stuff, but there's a lot of comic book stuff. So if you're into comics, and not just DC stuff sometimes, so you can check that out. But Eric, that is it. I don't even remember what you say at the end. Oh, I remember now.
Oh, goddamn
it. I remember now. What do we say, Eric?
That was the new 52, and now we're through.